Nick DiGilio Show, right here on 720 WGN. We're live in the Skyline Studio, 18 stories above beautiful downtown Chicago. Here until 4 o'clock, 11 p.m. to 4 a.m. every weekday, night and morning. And 312-981-7200 is the phone number for talk and text if you want to jump in. We are going to be talking about some of the best, some of the dishes that you can only get in Chicago and your favorite dish of your hometown. Our old friends, the Empty Pockets, will be live in studio. A really terrific band, and they're promoting a new CD and a new tour, which they're going to be talking about as well. We're going to talk about Gen X terms that were popularized by the Gen X, of which I am a member. I believe I'm right on the I'm right at the end of Boomers. I'm right at the beginning of Gen X. Classic stand-up, which we play from the Tonight Show, Johnny Carson Show, which you can watch on Antenna TV tonight. Steve Martin is going to be featured on our classic stand-up. We've got a round of Know Your Onion to do. That's where Tom Hush, who is my producer, he will read, we'll get a couple of callers on the line, and each will play around, and he will read a headline. A news headline, and you have to decide whether it's real or from The Onion, which is the fake newspaper, satirical comedy newspaper. The real news is so weird nowadays that it sometimes it's hard to tell whether it's a real news headline or one from The Onion. So those are some of the things that we're going to be doing throughout the morning and night and morning. 312-981-7200 is the phone number for talk and text. You can follow us on Twitter at Nick D Show. And stay with us on our Facebook page at facebook.com/Nick D Show. Lindsay Welbers is the author of Chicago Transit Hikes and has a blog called Third Coast Hikes and advocates getting out in the woods, even in around the city. And Lindsay, how you doing?
I'm doing well. How are you?
I am well. So tell me about how you got, how you first of all got into the love of nature. What was it? Where'd you grow up and where are you from and all that?
Well, I'm a lifelong Illinois resident. I've been here the whole time.
Yeah.
I grew up in central Illinois. If you know where Starved Rock is, I grew up in a town about half an hour west of that.
Gotcha.
And then my parents' house was just in the woods. So there was no riding your bike to the corner store because I lived in the woods. So it's just the nature has really just always been the most natural and comfortable place for me.
Yeah. Wow. And then now moving to the city, though, when you did move to Chicago, correct?
I did. Yes.
Yeah.
I moved in 06 for college and then permanently in 2010.
And what was that adjustment like? You know, you're living in the woods.
I had been familiar with city life, and we had friends who would come up here, and my sister had already moved here, so it wasn't a massive culture shock. But I will tell you that I was downright excited to learn the number of restaurants that would deliver food to my door that were not just the one pizza restaurant in town.
Right. It's the little things, you know?
It's just the little things. I get, what kinds of, from how many continents? Fantastic.
Yeah. That's outstanding. That's great. That's the, you get to appreciate that. Lindsay Welbers is with us, and we're going to talk about her her book, which is coming out in May, called Chicago Transit Hikes, and you can check out Third Coast Hikes. And it's about she wants people to get out there and experience nature. So we'll be doing that.
I'm going up the country, baby, don't you want to go? I'm going up the country. Baby, don't you wanna go? I'm going to some place where I've never been before.
Nick DiGilio Show continues here on 720 WGN. We're live in the Skyline Studio here until 4. 312-981-7200 is the phone number for talk and text. Lindsay Welbers is my guest. She is the author of a book that's coming out in May called Chicago Transit Hikes, and her blog is Third Coast Hikes. And Lindsay, tell us all about Third Coast Hikes.
So I guess Third Coast Hikes is just kind of, I guess the blog I started out when I started really backpacking, which I probably only really started going backpacking a couple of years ago. And it's just kind of where I started putting all of those photos and outlining the things I see and just, you know, putting my reflections of what I found while I was out there, in part to keep track for myself and in part because there's like a massive glut, I think, in the outdoors industry of news about the West, the western half of the U.S. and the East Coast is, you know, and the whole Appalachian Trail. But for some reason, they always forget us here in the Midwest.
Yeah, yeah.
So that was, you know, part of what I thought, what I was thinking when I was putting that out there. Just like, well, here we are.
Okay.
Don't forget us.
Don't forget us. Exactly. Now,
don't forget us. I mean, we've got so many amazing things. It's like the Great Lakes are just so astonishing. I don't understand why people don't remember them.
Yeah, yeah. How often do you get out there, Lindsay, and backpacking?
Oh, not nearly as often as I'd like. If I can get one good backpacking trip in a year, I think I'm doing okay.
Oh, wow. Okay. All right.
Yeah. Well, I'm busy.
Well, good. It's good to be busy. Lindsay Welbers is our guest. The book, which is coming out in May, is called Chicago Transit Hikes. Tell me about what's going to be in the book.
So I did my best to try and make it as useful as a document as possible to as many people as possible. So it is really a guidebook to all of the places, not even all of the places I could find, because I would have made it like a twice as long if I'd really gotten to include them all. These are the ones that are the best, that are the easiest to get to, using only the transit system that we already have. A lot of it's on the Metro. A few of them are on the CTA. And a number of them are on the South Shore Line, but these are all day hikes, or even there's a couple of campsites that you can get to just to go and enjoy the world that exists directly outside of downtown Chicago, and it gets beautiful fast.
Yeah. And I'm wondering how many people right now who are listening are like, wait a minute, I can take the CTA to a hike? Tell us a little bit about how surprising it is people can just jump on the Metro or the CTA and then be out in the woods or hiking.
I think I wanted to include the CTA, and because Chicago has so many beautiful places, I made sure we included a few of those. Like I couldn't forget the lakefront; it's right there, and it's perfect and it's beautiful.
Yeah.
But as soon as you hop on the Metro, you can, because of just how differently Metro operates, you can get so far away from downtown in like less than 90 minutes. I think I made it all the way out to Elburn while I was writing this book, a town I'd never heard of. It's at the end of the line. And what I found there was an adorable little town with Elburn Forest Preserve. It's just this beautiful prairie landscape and these thick woods. And there's a marker to the old Oregon Trail there, which is, I guess, the Oregon Trail before that Oregon Trail.
Okay.
So I found all of this neat history in a beautiful setting, 90 minutes from downtown Chicago, or less possibly by train. And it's just, it's pastoral out there. I mean, you're going past like fields, and you can see hawks out there. It's just so good. So good.
And surprising too, because it's just it's just a Metro train right away.
There are so many more than I thought there would be.
What are some of your favorites?
I'm a big fan of the Somme Preserve up in Northbrook, Somme. Somme. They've got the Somme Nature Preserve. I think it's a nature preserve. Their prairie is, but they've also got just this beautiful oaky woodlandscape. It's just so good. And that's one of my favorites. I'm also a big fan of Illinois Beach State Park. That's up in Zion. That one's super good because it has a campsite, and it's also the only Illinois State Park in the book. And I think it is the only place that you can access the beach in Illinois.
Mm.
right there on Lake Michigan. So that one's pretty good too.
Wow. Oh, that's cool. Now, what
about Fort Sheridan?
Fort Sheridan. Go ahead. Tell us about Fort Sheridan.
I mean, Fort Sheridan's just such a beautiful landscape, and that one's one of particularly good because it's actually really close to the train, so you don't have to walk very far once you leave the train to get to the trailhead. But it's got just this. It's right there on Lake Michigan, and we've got beautiful bluffs. So if you want to get a little topography in, that's a good place for it.
Yeah. I've been to Fort Sheridan. That's one of the few places that I've been to. I think a lot of people have gone to Fort Sheridan. It's really a very popular place, is it not?
It is, yeah.
Very cool. And the book is going to be available in May. How long did it take you to put the whole thing together? I mean, obviously you did a lot of traveling, you did a lot of hiking, but the book itself, how long did it take you to do?
It was kind of a whirlwind, actually. I think this idea has been rolling around in my head for a number of years, but I don't think I actually sat down to start writing the book until about early October.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a quick
turnaround.
That's a quick turnaround. I mean, it's not coming out until May, but...
But in the publishing world, that's a quick turnaround.
Oh,
yeah,
yeah, it is. It is, yeah.
I got started, and I had done a number of bits of legwork, and I figured out a good game plan. And then, if you're familiar with NaNoWriMo, which is National Novel Writing Month,
mm-hmm.
It's a program, happens every year. Thousands and thousands and thousands of writers across the globe dedicate the entire month of November to writing a novel. A novel is 50,000 words, so you just do that in a month. No big deal. No big deal. No, but when you break it down and make it a daily habit, it makes it pretty easy to, well, I mean, not easy, because I think everything else and everything, every other responsibility I had in life kind of set fire during that month. But that was, I think, the month that by the end of that month, I had a solid draft going. And during the middle of that, I thought it was going so well, the writing of my book was going so well that I sent out a couple of pitch letters expecting. There's an old adage that you should expect about 100 rejections before you get a single yes.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess, I don't know, there must just be an interest in this idea because there were like two hard yeses in my inbox before a single no came through.
Oh, wow.
I know. It's unusual.
Yes, it is. Very unusual. Yeah. Wow.
So I'm trying to keep that perspective of like, no, it's not this easy usually, Lindsay.
Yeah, it's not.
So we got a... I wrapped up a draft by the end of December, and the publisher worked really hard to make sure it got out, and I can't say anything but nice things about their team and their editor, and I can't wait.
It sounds exciting. Lindsay Welbers is here. She's the author of Chicago Transit Hikes, which comes out in May, and her blog is Third Coast Hikes. Likes to encourage people to get out, even people in the city, get out there and get out into nature. What do you think... what most people think when they don't explore much outside near Chicago? What do you think people in Chicago, why do they not do that?
I think there's the overall prevailing notion that, one, you need a car to get there, which I've done, I wrote a book about it. No, you don't. But lots of people don't want to drive, or it takes too long, or you feel like you have to go very far, and then it's so far you might as well stay overnight, and then it's a whole thing. No. Or maybe they've just never really had that kind of experience. Maybe they've never received that kind of exposure to just a natural woodland setting.
Yeah.
Or maybe it legitimately just is that. They've just never had that level of exposure. But everybody can benefit from going outside. It's nice out there.
So give me some examples of something that went wrong. Sometimes, because not every hike or every trip is going to go perfectly. What are some of your stories where it just didn't go right?
Oh man, the last time I managed to get a good backpacking trip in was at Isle Royal up in Lake Superior last year.
Mm-hmm.
Lake Superior is so beautiful that if you're really feeling brave, you could probably just drink Lake Superior and feel confident that you wouldn't die. But the Park Service does not recommend this.
No, they want
you to bring a water filter. And our water filter, my husband and I, kind of punked out on us in the middle of the trip.
Oh, no.
And, like, it just quit pumping water. we're sitting there at the edge of this cold lake trying to get it to turn lake water into drinkable water, and it was just not happening. So we are at this point probably 6 miles from the nearest tap.
Oh.
So tap water is not really an option. But we made it just fine. We ran into, when you come to Isle Royale, you have to do so on a boat because it's an island in the middle of Lake Superior.
Right.
And on the boat, we met this delightful old couple, an older couple, I don't want to be rude, but I think she was in her late 60s and he was in his early 70s, and it was their first backpacking trip in life.
Wow.
I know. And so their water filter worked just fine. When we ran into them in the campground, they shared it with us, and then we spent like 90 minutes making friends while we pumped our own water so that we didn't die of thirst.
Oh, there you go. Well, that turns out good. And then you meet some people along the way. Does that happen often? Do you meet people when you're doing these hikes?
Actually, kind of all the time.
Yeah?
All the time. It's everybody out there on the trail. You don't have to have a conversation with them, and you know that by virtue of the fact that you have met them in this place they work to get to, you already agree on enough things.
All right. Well,
we all agree that nature is beautiful, that we should conserve it. Like, we just all agree on a lot of these. So everybody out there, and if you work that hard and find yourself in a jam, you would hope somebody would help you out of the jam. So, you know, you end up just relying a little on the kindness of strangers.
You know, this older couple that ended up being their first hiking trip. That's really amazing. Did you ask them why it took them so long before they did?
We did. They are going out of their way to visit every national park. That's what they're doing with their retirement. So good for them.
Oh wow!
And it's a lot easier to visit every other national park, but not Isle Royale.
So
it's just a remote island in the middle of Lake Superior.
Yeah.
You have to get there with a boat. The boat comes every 4 days, so you can't really make a day trip out of it.
Wow.
You're kind of stuck there for at least 4 nights.
Wow. Every 4 days.
Yeah.
Wow. All right. Well, that's a trip right there. All right. Lindsay Welbers is with us. Lindsay Welbers is with us, and we've got more nature hiking stories to talk about. And if you guys get out there and have recommendations for some good hiking trips and just getting out into nature, our phone lines are open. Our text lines are open. We would love to hear from you. 312-981-7200. 312-981-7200. The book is called Chicago Transit Hikes. It comes out in May, but you can check out the blog at Third Coast Hikes and thirdcoasthikes.wordpress.com. All right, more with Lindsay Welbers here on the Nick DiGilio Show as we continue.
Now I taught the weeping willow how to cry, and I showed the clouds how to cover up a clear blue sky, and the tears that I cried for that woman are gonna flood you, big river, and I'm gonna sit right here until I die. I met her accidentally in St. Paul, Minnesota, and it tore me up every time I heard her drawl, southern drawl. Then I heard my dream went back downstream, cavorting in Davenport, and I followed you, big river, when you call.
All right. Nick DiGilio here. Nick DiGilio Show continues right here on 720 WGN. And we're live in the Skyline Studio here until 4 a.m. Coming up later on at 3:30. Every Wednesday at 3:30, we play a round of Know Your Onion. That's where our producer here, Tom, reads a news headline. And then you have to figure out whether it's real or it's from the satirical newspaper, The Onion. So that's coming up. We've got classic stand-up that we always play from The Tonight Show and The Johnny Carson Show, which you can see on Antenna TV every night. Steve Martin, we're going back to 1974 for some early Steve Martin. Our good friends The Empty Pockets, a really terrific band. They're going to come down here and talk about, they'll be live in studio, talk about their upcoming tour and CD and all that cool stuff. 312-981-7200 is the phone number for talk and text if you would like to join us. We are talking about getting out into nature. Lindsay Welbers is the author of Chicago Transit Hikes. It's coming out in May. You can check out the blog Third Coast Hikes. Likes to get people out there and out into nature. Lindsay, what do you think are the benefits from getting out there and going into the nature, into nature? What are some of the things that you think are great about it?
Well, there's so many. One, you get to experience wildlife. You get to take a one. It's good for health. Oh, you asked a big question. There's the physical benefits. You're wandering around, and it's a little bit tougher because you're challenging your balance in new ways on the trail than you would be compared to, say, like a sidewalk. So there's a whole element of physical fitness there. There's also the mental health benefits that come from just being out in nature, and those are a little harder to quantify, but there's just something about standing in the middle of a tall grass prairie and seeing nothing but plants on all sides of you, and it's just like a salve for, we're frequently just too connected to everything else, and that fixes that problem.
Yeah. So that's what you tell people about. Also, you since you go out there all the time, you have to have the right gear. You were just talking about the water filter earlier. What do you recommend for the best gear, and what do you need to have a safe and fun trip? I mean, this is a basic question. Like, what kind of gear do you need?
Well, for something like a lot of the hikes I outline in the book, you don't really need any particular special gear. Most of them are just simple day hikes, so it's, you know, bring a bunch of water. Water is the most important thing.
Yeah, yeah.
Got to stay hydrated.
Yep.
Bring comfortable shoes. Always, you know, if you make sure they fit and that they're going to stay on your foot. Like, don't wear your cute flats. Put on your sneakers. Beyond that, just, you know, being prepared for the weather and the sort of environment that you're going into.
And
it's really nice.
Yeah. So
yeah, that's about it.
Yeah, that sounds simple enough. It sounds simple. How do you what do you say to people who may be intimidated by going out? They've never really done it before. They haven't gone camping. They haven't gone hiking. For first timers, how do people start? And what's your advice?
Start slow and stay close to home. If you feel nervous or you're just not sure what you want to expect, especially if you, like, let's say you want to go camping, you've never been camping before, try and go someplace that isn't terribly far away from your own bed, if that's at all possible. If in the middle of the night it just dawns on you that you're miserable, you hate this, you want to go home, then now you know. And maybe just being close enough to know that you don't have to, or that you can just make it through the night, that might be enough of a motivator for you to be like, no, it's not that bad. I'm not too far from home. And just once you've made it, do what feels the most comfortable for you. But be careful. Go at your own pace. Don't let anyone rush you. Do what's most comfortable for everybody. And everybody's definition of that is different.
Yeah. But the advice is good. It's be if possible, be as close to home as you can.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Especially if you're nervous.
Yeah. Yeah.
You don't have to go too far.
Yeah. 312-981-7200 is the phone number for talk and text. Lindsay Welbers is with us. And she has an upcoming book called Chicago Transit Hikes, and if you want to check out her blog, it's Third Coast Hikes. And you can, even if you live in the city, Lindsay, if people who are city dwellers here in the city, it doesn't take very long to get out there and get into nature, correct?
It really doesn't.
Okay.
Super easy.
Let's see, 630 sends in a text that says, "Hi, sticking with Lake Superior, has your guest ever hiked Pictured Rock National Lakeshore?"
Oh, I loved Pictured Rocks.
Yeah.
Oh, that place was gorgeous. Oh, yes. The answer is yes, I have. I loved it.
Yeah.
I think that was probably our first, when we decided to start backpacking a couple of years ago, I think that was our first big hike. I think our first backpacking hike, because we wanted to stay close to home. So I think we only went up to like Devil's Lake, where there is no place to backpack. So it was like, that was easy.
Yeah.
We stayed near our car.
Yeah.
But we did a bit of walking around. We made sure our packs fit. We felt comfortable with it. And then we later, I think that year, went up to Pictured Rocks, and we did probably, if I do some quick math, we probably did about 20 miles worth of hiking that weekend. And it was fantastic. We dropped the car off, and then we got in a little shuttle bus inside the park, and they drove us 15 miles away from my car, and then we spent the next two nights walking back to the car, basically.
Yeah.
And it was just beautiful. I think we got rained on the whole time. I doubt it got above 50 degrees. And it was just so beautiful. Just, the lakeshore there is stunning. Just, and quite possibly the most red sunset I have ever seen.
Oh, wow.
Was on that trip.
Wow. So it's a good question, caller. You still have a great time, even though it's not 50 degrees and you're wet and it's raining.
I do, yes.
Yeah, you do. here's a question. Your husband, okay, you guys go hiking and you go on these trips together. Was this a common interest, or did you have this interest and got him into it? How did that work out?
I would actually say that he was surprised when I declared that we were going backpacking now, which is kind of how it happened.
Is that right?
Kind of, yeah. Well, like I said, I'd grown up in the woods.
Yeah.
So that was just always how I experienced the woods. He grew up in one of the southwestern suburbs. So when he went to visit nature, it was more of a traditional camping experience.
Right.
So in his experience, camping meant staying in a campground, and there's lots of other people in the campground.
Right.
My experience before that was like, no, I'm in the woods. I'm alone in the woods. Why are all these other people here? So a traditional camping experience didn't really jive with me right away.
Yeah.
And I feel a little differently about that now.
Yeah.
But so I think that was part of the reason I declared we were going. And then he just said, yeah, let's go. So he's very easy to get along with.
Oh, he was down with it. And, you know, even though.
Oh, completely.
Oh, that's cool. That's cool.
Confused, but agreeable.
Lindsay Welbers is with us. Third Coast Hikes is her blog. Check out thirdcoasthikes.wordpress.com. And the book will be coming out. It's called Chicago Transit Hikes. We got a couple of people on the line, Lindsay, who want to share some stories here.
Cool.
Here's Robert on WGN. Go ahead, Robert.
Yeah, great show, by the way, Nick.
Thank
always.
You.
And
thank
a
you.
Great guest. And the one thing I'll suggest, if you go hiking, leave your cell phone at home. You don't need to text the whole time you're out in the woods. Mm. But there's a place you can take the metro. You get off at the Western Springs stop. It's about 2 miles. It's Bemis Woods. And there's they turned Bemis Woods into a zip line. It's an obstacle course zip line. It's called Go Ape.
Mm.
You can look it up on your phone. And for $58, you can go out there and, you know, I think it took me about an hour and a half to do the entire, you know, process. And if you can make it without falling, you're a better man than me.
Yeah.
Wow. But it's a lot of fun.
Yeah.
And so it's like your guest is saying, it's a way to take a day out of your life and experience something new.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
And if you do bring your cell phone because people are attached to it, turn it off.
Yeah.
Try it. You know,
yeah.
You might like it.
Yeah. And also, but I think some people bring their cell phone, turn it off, but in case there's an emergency, you want to maybe have your cell phone if you're, you know, and maybe you won't even be able to get service, though, because of some of the places.
The service is no problem. But the point is, you're old enough and I'm old enough to realize that at one point, the thing that we hold in our hand was the size of your office.
Right.
So that computer that's probably the size of the entire floor is now in your hand.
Right.
And we tend to use it way too much.
Oh, yeah.
And
I agree.
You got to get back to nature. All right. Have a great show.
All right.
Show,
thanks, Robert. Take care. You ever go ziplining, Lindsay?
Not in a long time. That sounds fun.
Yeah. Yeah. I've never done it. I'm not good. I'm not real good with heights, Lindsay.
They strap you in. You're really secure.
Yeah, I know, but still, it's up there.
That's okay. There's lots of things on the ground worth looking at too.
The studio that we're in right now is all windows around me, and we're on the 18th floor, and I very rarely look out the window. So even though I'm enclosed and I know that everything is cool, it's still I get a little shaky, especially if I walk to the edge and look down. Out the window, I guess.
That's not fun for you? That sounds fun.
Oh, no. Not good. Lindsay is with us. It's Lindsay Welbers. And if you want to jump in, we got some phone lines open if you want to talk about some adventures that you've had or recommend some places where you can go hiking in and around the Chicago or Illinois area. 312-981-7200 for talk and text. Lindsay Welbers. Her book is called Chicago Transit Hikes, and you can check out thirdcoasthikes.wordpress.com for her blog. More talk about adventure just right outside your door. 312-981-7200. The Nick DiGiulio Show continues.
My own beliefs are in my song. The picture.
The Giglio Show continues here on 720 WGN. We're live in the Skyline studio here until 4. We're going to talk about some of the dishes that you can only get in Chicago and what are some of your favorite dishes. Our old friends, The Empty Pockets, a really terrific band, they're going to be here live in studio to talk about their new tour, and we'll play a couple of songs from them. Terms that have been populated by Gen X, we'll be chatting about. Our classic stand-up from The Tonight Show and The Johnny Carson Show, which you can see on Antenna TV every night. Legendary Steve Martin. We'll play a little bit of that. And a round of Know Your Onion, which is a quiz where Tom will read a news headline, and you have to figure out whether it's real or from the satirical newspaper The Onion. And the news is next from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom. Right now we are talking with Lindsay Welbers, who is the author of a book that's coming out in May called Chicago Transit Hikes, and you can check out the blog at thirdcoasthikes.wordpress.com. Lindsay wants you to get out there into nature, even if you live in the city. So, Lindsay, tell me about a couple of places here that some people might want to visit. The Joliet Ironworks Historic Site and the I&M Canal.
Yep, that's a good one.
Yeah, tell me about it.
So the Joliet Ironworks was a manufacturer of iron. They made, you know, they smelted iron there. And then I guess in the early 20th century, the early part of the 1900s, they closed the facility. And then the ravages of time happened. I think it was in the 1990s that the city of Joliet bought what was at that point a ruined ironworks and decided to allow nature to continue to take over. They removed a bunch of invasive stuff, noxious plants you don't want. And they're allowing, you know, the natural landscape of Joliet to take over, while meanwhile these buildings continue to crumble and just let nature reclaim them. So that's super cool. And then right next to that, you have the I&M Canal. So they're two places, but they're right next to each other, so they got lumped together in the book. The I&M Canal, I think there's about 7 miles of trail there, so there's plenty for a good long hike that you would do. If you're a high-mileage hiker, there's lots of good options for you. And the I&M Canal is just one of the coolest things in Chicagoland history. I don't know if people remember that, but it was an idea first proposed to connect Lake Michigan with the Mississippi River. That idea first was written down by, like, French explorers in the 1700s. We didn't get around to completing it until the 1930s, or maybe it was a little before then. I guess, yeah, a little before then. And then but we did it. We connected Lake Michigan all the way to the Mississippi River, and then we quit shipping things on barges and canals mostly. So the entire I&M Canal is a wonderful, beautiful system that you can ride all the way down to, I think, Peru or LaSalle, Illinois. LaSalle.
Mm.
You can ride it if you really feel adventurous. They don't have a train down there, but you can't get there. Yeah, it's just gorgeous. Full of turtles, actually. Just,
oh, is
like,
that right?
Tons and tons of turtles. That's the one. I remember I was out there one day. It was a summer day. I just, I only count all the turtles I see. I ran out of fingers fast.
So a lot of turtles out there. You know, who would think, that you can see something this cool in Joliet. I mean, nothing against Joliet, but it just, you know, and like, this is what I'm talking about in terms of what you're doing that people can discover. Because you don't think, let's go out on a beautiful nature hike in Joliet. That's just something that doesn't pop into your head.
Nope, but there it is. I think there's just like this massive distance, because we live a very connected lifestyle. And we're just, we have a tendency to always be staring at our screens. We forget to look up. And when we do look up, we notice there are birds there.
Yeah.
It's like there's a lot going on.
There is.
And our ancestors, those who came and settled this place before even Europeans came here, we knew what beautiful landscape we were encountering, and that's why people moved here.
Yeah.
So it's been here the whole time. You just have to look around.
Yeah. No, it's true. I mean, this is good because, you know, our caller said, one of the callers that called in, put your phone down for a while and look around, because there's a lot to see.
And that's good advice.
Yeah. Well, what about Indiana Dunes National Park? I've been there.
Oh, yeah? Tell me about it.
It was beautiful. Just, you know, Indiana Dunes, and it's a very popular, park, too.
You know what surprised me about Indiana Dunes when I was writing this book is I thought it had one train station, but it doesn't. Indiana Dunes has three.
Yeah.
So there's, and it's all within the national park, too. That's the cool thing. And then the national park completely surrounds the state park, which is also accessible by train. Mm-hmm. So Indiana Dunes plays heavily in the book. That's a good one.
Yeah. Yeah, it's also very popular. It was I haven't been there since I was like a kid. But I remember really having a great time. Now, here's an interesting go ahead.
What I think they put it together, or at least they started marketing it this way in the last couple of years, but the state park has a really good hike. It's called the Three Dune Challenge. It's about a mile and a half long hike, so it's not a real long one, but it is tough for everybody. It's so good. It goes to the tops of the three largest dunes within the state park, the three tallest ones. And so it's not a very long hike, but it is mostly vertical and on sand.
Oh, man.
So the trail is eroding beneath you as you walk. My husband and I, we went, and the two of us, we're young, we're in good shape, and we're huffing and puffing our way up.
Ugh.
And there's, like, fat troops of Boy Scouts and, like, little families. There was one kid who just dramatically fell down in the sand and said, I can't. It was very funny. But what's so good about the Three Dune Challenge is that, you know, you can be a big adventure hiker like me. You can be a troop of Boy Scouts, and everybody goes at their own pace, and everybody has a challenging and really rewarding hike.
Oh, that sounds cool. I just want to get this from you, too. You've written about the best outdoor areas that are accessible for people with disabilities.
I tried to include that in the book as best I could.
Yeah, well, what are some of the more accessible outdoor places and experiences that people can have?
That's a tough one, because everybody's definition of what accessibility is different.
That's true.
So what I've done is tried every place that made the cut. And most of the definitions, you know, most of the things that made it into the book are based upon mostly the transit system. I can't put another train station down, much as I'd like to.
Gotcha.
So when I included those entries in the book, I went out of my way to try and provide a description of the trail itself. What are the conditions somebody might expect? Is it going to be rough? Is it paved with gravel? Is there a lot of topography? There are a few parks where they will, if you need to borrow one of their wheelchairs, they will loan you the use of the wheelchair. I think Garfield Park Conservancy has a number of wheelchairs available on a first-come, first-served basis, so that's cool. The National Park, Indiana Dunes National Park, if you call ahead and inquire, but they do have one, it is a sand-capable wheelchair that they will loan out, so that's cool.
Wow.
I know. I was really excited to learn that.
I didn't even know that existed, a sand-capable wheelchair.
Yeah. Oh. Apparently it's got treads.
Oh, wow. That's pretty cool.
So that was the approach I tried to take. I did not want to go to all the effort of producing this book and then, you know, realize that I forgot quite a large number of people.
Right.
So I just did I can't tell you if it's because everybody is so different. All I can do is provide you with as much information as possible so that you can feel informed to make a decision that's best for you.
Okay. The book is Chicago Transit Hikes. It's going to be available in May, and it's more than 30 hikes that are easily accessible by CTA Metra and the South Shore Line. Lindsay Welbers is the author, we've been having some fun talking about getting out there, and people should get out there. The weather's getting warmer, you know?
Oh, it's a beautiful day.
Yeah, yeah. Weather's getting warmer. People should get out there and get out in the woods there. ThirdCoastHikes.wordpress.com. That's the blog, and the book comes out in May. Lindsay, a real pleasure talking to you.
Thank you so much. It's been a joy.
Yeah, okay. Thanks very much, and good luck. There's Lindsay Welbers, author of Chicago Transit Hikes. You can follow her on Instagram, too, at ThirdCoastHikes. And again, ThirdCoastHikes.wordpress.com. That is the blog, and the book will be out in May, Chicago Transit Hikes. For all you people who want to get out there, get some exercise, do some hiking, you can do it. Even if you live in the city, you can do it. All right. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We are going to talk about some dishes that you can only get in Chicago, and what are some of your favorite dishes in your hometown? 312-981-7200 is the phone number. It's the Nick DiGilio Show, continuing right here on 720 WGN. We'll be right back. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN, and the show continues on this Wednesday morning. It's now Wednesday. We got some great stuff coming up on the show. Please stay tuned. 312-981-7200 for talk and text. We'll be joined by the band The Empty Pockets, old friends who've been on the show many times. We'll talk about their new tour and maybe play a couple songs from their CD. We're going to talk about terms that were popularized by the Gen Xers. We do play stand-up, classic stand-up from The Tonight Show, The Johnny Carson Show, which you can see on Antenna TV every night. And we'll play some vintage Steve Martin from 1974. Got a Know Your Onion coming up, too. And that's a game that we play where Tom is your host, and he reads a news headline, and you have to guess whether it is real or from the satirical newspaper The Onion. And then you win. You win prizes. So there you go. All right. We all know that Chicago has some very, very legendary signature dishes. And ChicagoFoodPlanet.com put together the best 21-plus signature Chicago dishes. What are some of your favorite signature dishes from Chicago? And what are some of your favorite signature dishes if you're not from Chicago and you're from someplace else? What signature dishes do you enjoy from your town? 312-981-7200. So first, obviously the first one here on the list is deep dish pizza from Lou Malnati's. It says, let's kick things off with the most famous Chicago dish of all time. This is why you came to Chicago, to finally sink your teeth into a thick wedge of melted cheese, personalized toppings, and zesty tomato sauce. Why is it so important? There are many fierce competitors claiming to have the best Chicago deep dish pizza, but Lou Malnati's is the crown jewel. Its unique butter crust sets it apart, and every single inch of aluminum pan is covered with lip-smacking layers of high-quality ingredients. So here's an insider tip. There's often a long wait at this Chicago cult classic, but you can sink your teeth into Lou Malnati's irresistible crunch crust much sooner if you make a late-night trip or visit for an early lunch. Or even better, join us there on a Second City classic food tour and a VIP experience you can take. Yeah, I've got a Lou Malnati's across the street from my house. It's not very far. So, next, the Chicago Italian Beef Sandwich at Al's. Al's Italian Beef. Do you have a favorite Italian beef place? Is it Al's?
I mean, Al's is the one I go to the most because it's the closest. There's one in Wrigley.
Yeah.
And I live fairly close to Wrigley. So I love that Al's. It's a great Al's. They do the beef right. But I know Bona Beef does a nice.
They do.
Does a nice one. And if I'm making it at home, I kind of cheat a little bit. I do the, you can get like a bucket. The bucket of beef.
Oh, sure.
From Aldi.
Yeah.
And it's a good way to make a little Italian beef at home.
We used to, when I was younger, my parents and I used to, when we had like beef at home, there was, I don't know if this product still exists or not. It was in the frozen section. It was called Gaucho. Gaucho beef. And that was the stuff that, you know, if we were eating beef at home, you know, not getting an Italian beef at a restaurant or something, that's the beef we used to eat. It was frozen in the frozen section. It was called Gaucho beef. Do we know if it's still around? Is Gaucho still around? Because that it was very popular in back in the day when I was a kid. We ate it a lot. We ate a lot of Gaucho beef. So, but yeah, they pick Al's. Al's is fantastic. There are a lot of places where you can get good Italian beef in the city. You know what I mean? Mr. Beef is good.
Mr. Beef.
I like Roma's, which is on the northwest side by Six Corners. It's on Cicero, right near Montrose, between Irving and Montrose on Cicero. It's called Roma's. That's the one I went to when I was in high school. I had a couple of friends who worked there. You know, they worked there part-time, and that's Roma's was always where we went to get our Italian beef.
Yeah, there's a place near where I grew. If anybody out there is from Crystal Lake or nearby area, there's a place called Mr. A's. And unfortunately, the owner just passed away. He was great. He was great. And it's a great little place that had been there forever. And I always remembered it because they'd have a sign. You could always get like, they would do catering. You know, you get the big, you know, tray of beef.
Right.
But it was called, they called it party beef.
Party beef?
Yeah, get your party beef. I distinctly remember that in the sign every day. I'd go pass it on the way to school, on the way to Central, Crystal Lake. And they would say, get your party beef
get
here.
Get your party beef.
And boy, was it party beef. Yeah. It was good beef.
I will say this, since we are in Lent at this time, and I know people like to go and get a pepper and egg sandwich. We were talking about pepper and egg sandwiches and how popular they are. My favorite pepper and egg sandwich is actually served at a beef place.
Really?
Yeah, it's Jay's Beef near Agansett, near Montrose. It's right next to a McDonald's. Jay's Beef. They've got great beef, but I'm telling you, it's the best pepper and egg sandwich I've ever. I'm not even Catholic, and I eat pepper and egg sandwiches from there. But yeah, in this article, they pick Al's, and that's fair. That's fair. Portillo's has good.
They do have good beef.
Portillo's has good everything.
That's true.
Everything is good at Portillo's.
Do you like your beef with the cheese?
Not really.
Me neither.
No, I like a dip too. I like a wet.
Oh yeah, you got to get the wet beef.
Yeah,
a little jardinera on there too.
Yeah, but I'm not a big cheese. You know, I mean, I'll eat it if there's cheese on it, I'll eat it. But I prefer my beef sort of traditional with no cheese. But yeah, Al's is the one. We're talking about signature dishes in Chicago that everybody who comes here must try. 312-981-7200. A lot more to talk about here. We have we're such a big food town, and we have so many like iconic signature dishes. I mean, obviously we start with deep dish pizza, and then go to the beef. And there's a lot more to it. 312-981-7200 for talk and text. Signature dishes in Chicago is what we're talking about here on 720 WGN. All right, 312-981-7200 is the phone number. It's Nick DiGilio here. We are live in the Skyline studio here until 4 o'clock. Our old friends, The Empty Pockets, a terrific band, are going to join us after 1. And if you want to join us, it's 312-981-7200. We're talking about some of the iconic and signature dishes of Chicago. And if you have an iconic and signature dish that you love in this city or wherever you're from, we would love to hear from you. We got some texts coming in. We were talking about Italian beef. Al's got picked in this article. 217 says Novi's beef. 847 says Johnny's on North Avenue has an outlet in Arlington Heights and they rock. I've had Johnny's on North. 815 says Chickie's beef. There's a lot of places where you can get some beef. I was talking about how when I was a kid, we used to get this stuff in the frozen section at the grocery store called gaucho beef, and I haven't had it in years, but according to 847, they still make gaucho beef and it's awesome. Okay. 405 says, I grew up in Oklahoma, and my favorite dish from my home state is chicken fried steak with gravy, mashed potatoes, and green beans or sweet corn. I love chicken fried steak. I love it. It's so good. All right, let's see. More signature dishes right here from Chicago. Next on the in the article, it says, basic fried chicken dinner at Harold's Chicken Shack. Yeah, Harold's Chicken Shack is fantastic. The times that I've had the fried chicken at Harold's, it's usually right before or after a Hawks game, because there's one right by the UC. That's the one I've gone to, and the chicken is great. Have you ever had chicken from Harold's?
Yeah, there was, we were doing a remote. I was filling in with John Williams. He's doing a remote right up at Northwestern, and the Harold's truck showed up.
Oh, they did.
And I was so excited because I rarely get the chance to have Harold's, and it is.
It's great. Fantastic fried chicken. How about this one? The buttermilk old-fashioned Chicago donut at Do Right Donut. I've never had one. Never had one. It's the Do Right Donuts buttermilk old-fashioned donut. It's in the West Loop. Crunchy on the outside, pillowy on the inside, and coated in a vanilla bean glaze. This donut reaches perfection when it's dunked in coffee. You ever dunk your donuts? Do you dunk your donuts?
I do dunk my donuts.
I do not.
Wow. Not even when you were a coffee man?
No.
Oh, I like it. I like a little bit of the, I don't know, just something about the flavor changes that I quite like.
Yeah, I mean, there's a whole place called Dunkin' Donuts, so yes. And my dad's a dunker.
Ah, I see.
Yeah, he's a big-time coffee drinker, my dad. My dad, here's the thing about my dad. He's been drinking coffee. I think he's been drinking coffee since he was about 12. I'm not kidding. And my dad can have like 2 cups of coffee and go right to bed and go right to sleep. And it's not decaf. It's the real stuff. I don't understand it. By the way, my dad can fall asleep anytime, anywhere. Me, it takes me 90 minutes to fall asleep with no caffeine in me. I'm a very light sleeper, so I wake up every 20 minutes. You know, I've had trouble with my sleeping basically my whole life. My mom's like that too, but my dad, out like a light, he can have 2 cups of coffee right before bed. Boom, he's asleep 5 minutes in. The Chicago style hot dogs at Portillo's. That's next here. And Portillo's is great. Everything at Portillo's is great. Every time I talk about Portillo's, I talk about how perfect their chili dog is. It's a perfect chili dog. I don't know how they do it. I don't know how consistent. I mean, how they're so consistent. I'm talking about different locations at different times. They put the exact right amount of chili on it. You know how you get a chili dog? Sometimes it's covered in chili and it falls all over the place, and you got to get a spoon and napkins and all that stuff. They put enough chili on there so it's not falling out. It doesn't fall out. I don't know how they do it. And then they put, like, it's just chili and onions. And it's a perfect chili dog. It's the best chili dog ever. But Portillo's, like I said, everything at Portillo's is good. How about the famous Kuma Burger at Kuma's Corner?
Yeah.
I like Kuma. I like Kuma. Sometimes, though, they put too much stuff on a burger.
You can get a little bit crazy there.
Yeah, I mean, I love the fact that they name all the burgers after heavy metal.
Oh, yeah.
I love that. They're heavy metal burgers. I think that's cool. But sometimes there's, like, you look at it and go, man, that's just too much stuff.
You go in there, you get the Slayer burger, and you won't be able to eat for the rest of the day.
Yeah.
But
Kuma's
it's
is great.
Delicious. Yeah.
Kuma's is great. There's a reason why there's a wait, you know what I mean, at Kuma's. Here's Gary on WGN. Hey, Gary.
Hi. I live just on the eastern edge of Jeff Park, and I sometimes get over to Roma's, and they have a Italian beef, Italian sausage combo named the Bob Collins Special.
Oh, really?
It was up on the board the last time I was in there, and it's got the spicy gardenera on it.
Yeah, so it's basically a combo, but they named it after Bob Collins.
Yeah.
Wow. Did Bob Collins have a connection to Roma's, or the people at Roma's?
He used to stop in there when he worked over at the TV station, when he had the studios over there.
Yeah.
And he'd drive down Irving Park to Six Corners turn on Cicero, and then get on the expressway on Eden's at Wilson.
Yeah, wow. I didn't know that. I had no idea that Bob Collins frequented Roma's. That's really cool.
Yeah.
I didn't know that. That's great. All right, Gary, thanks.
All right.
I had no idea Bob Collins went to Roma's. All these years, you know? That's really cool. All right. So we got more signature dishes here. If you want to jump in, it's 312-981-7200. Butter toffee at the Fudge Pot. Make your Chicago visit a little sweeter by heading to the Fudge Pot, an Old Town mainstay for over 50 years. Chocoholics don't go wrong with their offerings, but we're particularly fond of the butter toffee. One of their most sought-after products, the buttery sweet caramel, is covered in either dark or milk rich chocolate and finished off with a generous sprinkle of crunchy nuts. That's not all. The Fudge Pot has gift boxes that make perfect Chicago presents for your loved ones back home. You don't have room in your carry-on? No worries, because it also ships nationwide. And insider tip here is looking for other Chicago souvenirs of your favorite gourmand. Chicago Food Planet offers gift certificates for that person in your life who is always hungry and excited for exciting experiences. If they try the fudge pot on their own, you can take our Second City Classic food tour. And so they offer food tours. So, all right. The Melbeck Beef Empanada from 5411 Empanadas. Never had that. It's a food truck. It's one of the best food trucks in the city, they say. The Melbeck Beef, a blend of shredded Angus beef slow roasted in red wine reduction. So that's the empanada. That sounds great. Empanadas are good. How about the Semita Atomica at Semita's Puebla? Chicago's Mexican population is one of the largest in the country. Their cuisine is woven tightly into the fabric of the food here. That's why they go beyond the taco to the Semita, which is a typical sandwich made up of avocado, chipotle sauce, cheese, and meat inside a homemade sesame seed roll. So there it is. All right. Lemon ice, lemon Italian ice from Miko's Italian Ice. Nothing says summer in Chicago like grabbing a cup of cool and colorful Italian ice at Miko's. The sorbet-like dessert is made exclusively out of crushed frozen fresh fruit and completely dairy-free. Though Miko's boasts exotic flavors like cucumber and guava, nothing beats the classic lemon on a hot July night. I've never had the Italian ice at Miko's. I've had Italian ice a million times in my life because, you know, I'm Italian.
I think that, yeah. Makes
I mean,
sense.
It's a staple. But I've never tried Miko's. Where is Miko's? Can you look up the address of Miko's? M-I-K-O apostrophe S Italian ice. So
it's in 2236 North Sacramento.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Oh. So that's the one in Logan Square, but it was, I believe back in March, there was one in Bucktown.
Okay.
That shuttered, unfortunately.
Oh, okay. All right, so that's Miko's Italian ice. Logan Square. All right. More signature dishes. What are your favorites? 312-981-7200 for talk or text. And if you're not from Chicago, what are some of the great signature dishes from your hometown or places that you visited? 312-981-7200. Nick DiGilio show continues.
And you know some people are made of wood. Some people have hearts of stone. Some people are to no good. Ah, but baby, I'm for real.
Yeah, I'm for real. Aaron. Oh, man. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We are live in the Skyline Studio, 18 stories above beautiful downtown Chicago. It is a Wednesday morning, and that means we're going to play a little Know Your Onion with Tom reading news headlines, and you have to figure out whether they're real or from The Onion. We are going to have The Empty Pockets live in the studio. Really terrific band. They're old friends of the show, been on many times. We're going to chat with those guys, talk about their new tour and CD, play a couple songs as well. We also have terms that were popularized by the Gen Xers. And we are part of our stand-up, our classic stand-up from The Tonight Show, The Johnny Carson Show, which you can see on Antenna TV every night. We're going to do some classic Steve Martin from 1974. 312-981-7200 is the number if you care to join us. We're talking about signature dishes that you that we have here in this city, and have specific places too where you can get these signature dishes. Rico Benny's breaded steak sandwich from Bridgeport. It's a great sandwich. It's a big sandwich too. You won't be hungry after you eat that. 219 says Zell's Roast Beef in the region. Best Ribs, Twin Acres from 708 area code. Oh, we have to mention a signature. You're talking about a signature dish. You can't talk about a signature dish when you don't mention the Gale Street Inn, the greatest restaurant on the planet, and their ribs. That's the signature dish of the Gale Street Inn, are the ribs, and they're fall off the bone fantastic. My main man, George Karzis, who is the guy who runs the greatest restaurant on the planet, the Gale Street Inn in Jefferson Park. Go in there, go to galestreet.com, check it out. Say hi to George. Tell him Nick sent you. Won't get you a discount or anything, but...
I'll say that's cool.
Yeah. But if you've never had the ribs at Gale Street Inn, you don't know what you're missing. They're the best. You know, actually, all the food at the Gale Street Inn, I don't have the ribs every time I go in there. I know a lot of people, every time they go, they have the ribs. I like to mix it up because all their food is great. 708, Caputo's Grocery on Grand and Harlem. Been there 9,000 times. It's great. Caputo's Grocery, in-store, order and walk out. Yeah, Caputo's. I lived near Grand near Austin for a bunch of years. So that was a regular place that we would go to, Caputo's. 630 says, how about Cane's Chicken Tenders? I don't know Cane's Chicken Tenders. All right. How about Tony's Dry Chili Chicken at Lao Tse Chown? That's in the Chinatown neighborhood. It has great Szechuan dishes. Chef Tony Hughes' dry chili chicken is a must-eat, especially if you prefer stir fries with a kick. Tender bites of chicken are tossed in a savory blend of ginger, garlic, green onions, peppercorns, Szechuan peppercorns, and a generous handful of dried chilies for a kind of spice that hurts so good. So that's a spicy. That's spicy. Oh, man.
You're not a spicy guy, right?
I'm not. A little spice is fine, but I don't, you know, like the crazy hot stuff, I don't understand. But I know people who do. I know people who, the hotter the better.
We guys who would get you on hot ones. Let's see what that would be like.
I wouldn't survive.
would you accept the interview?
Yeah, I would accept the interview, sure. But, I mean, I love that. I love hot ones. I watch it on the internet all the time. But I would not survive. I wouldn't get past the second bottle. Would never make it to Da Bomb. There's no way I would make it to Da Bomb. For people who don't know, Hot Ones is this show. What's the host's name, Sean?
Sean Evans.
Sean Evans is the host. And he has celebrities on. And they put chicken wings in front of each of them. So Sean has a bunch of chicken wings in front of him. And the celebrity has chicken wings in front of him. And he interviews the celebrities. And he interviews them very well. You can check it out online. There are tons of episodes on YouTube and online of Hot Ones. And he interviews the celebrities. They always usually have something to plug. And as the interview proceeds, they eat chicken wings. The first chicken wing has the most mild sauce. And I don't know, what is it, 5 chicken wings or 6 chicken wings?
I want to say it's like 6.
Yeah. And each chicken wing is covered in sauce that gets progressively hotter. And it's very entertaining to watch these people because as they get hotter and hotter and hotter, and I'm talking like really hot, like celebrities are, they bring out the milk. They've got to drink the milk. They start sweating. Their eyes start watering. And they have to answer these questions. And a lot of celebrities just can't even think because of how hot it is. So they sometimes when you get to like one of the last questions, it's like, I can't use my brain right now. But it's very, very entertaining. The Key and Peele one is really, really funny. Well, I mean, everything they do is really funny. But Keegan-Michael Key goes, you go to hell, Sean, after he takes a bite. And it wasn't even the hottest one. It was like it was close to the hot. He and Jordan Peele are losing it. You go to hell, Sean. All right, how about this? Pulled pork at the Smoke Daddy. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Long before you see Wicker Park Smoke Daddy, you'll smell the intoxicating wafts of smoked meat lingering in the air. The barbecue is described as Memphis Texarkana, and though we don't know exactly what that means, we can definitely say that our taste buds sing. The slow-cooked pulled pork is no frills, but absolutely heavenly. It's fantastic. Have you ever had the pulled pork at Smoke Daddy?
I have not. I've never been to Smoke Daddy.
What?
Yeah, I've never.
Oh,
it's just never happened.
You have to rectify that situation. Smoke Daddy's fantastic. But yeah, the pulled pork there is great. How about Saganaki at Santorini? If you've ordered a plate of flaming, sizzling hot cheese, then you can yell Opa. Well, you have Chicago to thank for that. It's a Greek restaurant standard. But Saganaki was actually invented right here in this city. What? Really? Wow, I didn't know that. Saganaki was invented in Chicago. I did not know that. I did not know that. That was my Johnny Carson, by the way. Yes! That's my Ed McMahon.
Hermetically sealed.
Yep. Funkin' Wagnall's porch since noon today. the Johnny Carson reruns on Tenet TV. You gotta watch them. Greektown Santorini has been keeping the torch alive with their focus on authentic flavors, fresh ingredients, and lively atmosphere. Their version of Saganaki is a gooey tribute smothered in lemon juice and served with piping hot pita for the ultimate satisfaction. It's great stuff. I did not know it was invented here, though. I think I've blown my own mind. I didn't have no idea. All right. How about the edible balloon dessert at Alinea? Well, that's fancy stuff right there. Though Chicago is a city that prides itself on tradition, it's also a city that pushes the boundaries of what's possible. Enter Alinea, a Michelin-starred restaurant that has consistently been named one of the top 50 restaurants in the world. Since its opening, they have redefined what fine dining can be, and nothing exemplifies that better than the edible balloon made from green apple taffy. Get your phones ready. This is one dessert you'll need to prove actually happened. That was featured on one of them food shows, you know, where people go to restaurants and eat. You know what I'm talking about?
I know of the genre, yeah.
I don't know if it was the tattooed human garbage can with the bleached tips.
Guy Fieri?
Yeah, Guy Fieri. I hate that guy, but I watch his show because I like the format. I love the format. Chicago's Best is another one. That's fun. But all those traveling where people travel around and eat, it's a genre that I really like. And then maybe you'll find some stuff, especially Chicago's Best, because it's local. And, you know, you see stuff on Chicago's Best and you go, oh, I've never been there before. Yeah.
That's how I found Boppin' Grill.
Boppin' Grill.
Yeah.
Where is that?
So they've got two locations, one in Rogers Park by Loyola, and then one, I want to say, off the Belmont Red Line. And it's burgers and stuff, but they put a twist on it where they put burgers and Korean fusion.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah,
you know
yeah,
I mean?
Yeah. I know exactly what
and
you're talking about.
You get like a kimchi burger.
Yep.
That's my favorite thing of all time.
I know exactly what you're talking. I just didn't realize the name of the place.
Yeah, Boppin' Grill. And Guy Fieri's been there.
Yeah, he has. Yep. All right. 864 says, how about a cinnamon roll cake? I made one Thanksgiving, and it was so delicious. Tastes so good, you want to slap your mama.
That's pretty good.
I don't know where that phrase came from, but it's a funny one. It also reminds me, every time I do, it's so good, you're going to slap your mama. It also reminds me of one of Jackie Gleason's lines in Smokey and the Bandit, because his son is such a dummy. He goes, there is no way, no way you came from my loins. First thing I'm going to do when I get home is punch your mama in the mouth.
Personally, I'm a fan of I'm going to barbecue your ass
in molasses. Everything he says in that movie is funny. Jackie Gleason is hilarious in Smokey and the Bandit. I've seen that movie 8 million times. You know, my old producer, Andy Herman, had never seen it. And I was like, how is it possible that you've reached your 30s and you've never seen Smokey and the Bandit, so I made him watch it and then do a full report on the air. He didn't like it as much as everybody else. He was like, yeah, it was okay. And I'm like, no, it's not okay. It's Smokey and the Bandit. So, okay. Lots of texts coming in. And we're talking about signature dishes in and around the Chicago area. 312-981-7200 for talk and text if you would like to join us right here on WGN.
There's a port on a western bay, and it serves 100 ships a day. Lonely sailors pass the time away and talk about their homes. And there's a girl this harbor town, and she works laying whiskey down. They say, brandy, fetch another round. She serves them whiskey and wine. The sailors say, brandy, you're a fine girl.
You're a fine girl.
What a good wife you would be.
Such a fine girl.
Yeah, your eyes could steal a sailor.
Yeah. The Nick DiGilio Show continues right here on 720 WGN. We are live in the Skyline Studio, 18 stories above beautiful downtown Chicago. The news is next from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom. We've been talking about signature dishes here in and around the Chicago area, and we want you to share some of yours. Let's see. We now have the caramel cake at the Brown Sugar Bakery. Never been there. They say pepper and egg sandwich at Fiori's. It's a Ukrainian village. It's a delicatessen. I've never had the pepper and egg there. Like I said, the best pepper and egg sandwich I've ever had was at Jay's Beef, which is on Narragansett at Montrose. That's my favorite. Okay, tons of texts coming in. Let's see, 847 said, sad there's no country fried bacon, Dippin' Dogs, country fried Euro or chili bombs on that list. Yeah, that was from our old buddy Gus, Wiener and Still Champion. He used to do some crazy stuff with the deep fryer. 312 says In-N-Out Burger would put Mickey D's out of business. I've had an In-N-Out Burger, and they're quite good. They are quite good. 847 says, my cousins drive down from Milwaukee to try different authentic Mexican restaurants. The greasier, the better. Also, my brothers drive in from Galena for pierogi from Belmont and Central or German food on Lawrence. We're fortunate to have any type of food available. This is a great food city. I think, you know, we talk about food a lot on this show and on this station because there's a lot of great food in this city. We have great restaurants, great fast food places and hot dog joints. We're food-wise, it's the best. It's the best. 708, Lowry's Prime Rib. Yeah, that place is good. I haven't been there in a long time. It's been too long. Drive past there going home from here. going to the Kennedy. So I drive past there a lot. Have you ever been to Lowry's Prime Rib?
I have, actually.
Did you get the spinning salad?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, man. Yeah. That place is, it's so good.
Yeah. It's a meat overload at times, though.
It's the best. Get your meat sweats going.
God.
Fall asleep right at the table.
I'm so glad that you have acknowledged the existence of meat sweats.
Oh, no, it's a real thing.
It's so real. And I have said that to people. I was like, oh, man, I got the meat sweats. They're like, I think there's something wrong
no,
with you.
No.
No, you get tired, you get sluggish.
Exactly. And that I love it.
you get tunnel vision. You
I'm
know?
An unapologetic carnivore. And I know that a lot of people who listen to the show are vegans or vegetarians. And God bless you. That's awesome.
Yeah,
but
sure.
I grew up eating meat, man. I can't imagine not eating meat. I swear to you. I just can't. And I know, I have carnivore friends who right now are not eating meat because that's what they're giving up for Lent. And it was funny because all the guys that I hung out with, when I was younger and in my 20s and stuff, all Catholic. So we would go out to eat or something. We'd go to like a Denny's or there used to be a place called Wags. You remember Wags?
It sounds very familiar.
It was a Wags. Walgreens restaurant.
Wags?
It had the logo, the W logo. It was called Wags. There was one on Milwaukee right by the Portage Theater. Right by Six Corners. We used to go to that place all the time.
Wags.
It had the W, the Walgreens W, which also looks like the Washington
Nationals.
But yeah, Wags. It was like a Denny's. You know, you could get breakfast there and all that kind of stuff. It's a diner.
That's cool.
And there were several of them. It was like a thing that Walgreens did. It was called Wags.
Yeah. My go-to diner is there's the Golden Pancake House next to the Riviera.
Sure.
Which is amazing. Scenes from Widows were shot there.
I've been there a million times.
It's the best.
I don't know if I've ever been there sober.
No.
I got a golden nugget right down the street from where I live.
Oh, no.
I'm not kidding.
Oh, the noosh.
Listen, I got a Potbelly's, a Lou Malnati's, and a golden nugget. Like within walking distance of my apartment. Oh, and smoke. And I don't even mention smoke.
Oh, boy.
Barbecue.
I don't know how.
The
you should be 500 pounds.
I know. I'm not kidding. The smoke is so good. By the way, barbecue, if you want barbecue, go to smoke. It's the best. The Massa Cafe on North Avenue in Elmwood Park. Great selection of homemade gelato. The Barisse sausage at Bari Foods on Grand. Bari is great. Have you ever been to Bari?
Mm-hmm.
Best sub you'll ever have. The onion rings at King's Gyros, Euros on the northwest side. Especially if you, they're especially good if you dip them into the special Euro sauce. That place is great. It's been there for years too. Let's see. Just letting you know, Cane's chicken tenders are beer battered and come with grilled Texas toast and homemade sauce. Where's Cane's?
Cane's,
it's spelled like Patrick Kane.
No. It's spelled C-A-N-E.
C-A-N-E? Well, here on the text, there's a K here.
Well, they have spelled it wrong. Oh. I promise you, I know. It's called Raising Cane's.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
That's a chicken place. Yeah, chicken place.
Oh,
there's one in Norwich. There's one right by the north.
There's one in Rogers Park now.
Yeah. No. I know. I've had it. It's great. My dad goes nuts over that.
Yeah, you get the cane sauce.
If we ever go to a movie at the Norwich, it's like, we got to go to Cane's.
Got to get to
Because there's a Culver's
Cane's
right there, too. That stretch on Harlem by the Norwich Theater, man.
It's just fast food heaven.
I mean, the Culver's is right next to the theater. So
you should bring it in.
Yeah, smell up the theater. Yeah, you love that. You're suggesting you worked at the 400 where people would bring in full dinners?
Well, now that I am a member of the general public, I'm a regular citizen. You know, I understand the struggle.
Dan here, an Illinois native in Columbia, South Carolina. Two signature dishes here. The first, named for Strom Thurmond. It's a sandwich called the Dixiecrat. It's a link of onion sausage on white bread with plain yellow mustard. It's that simple. But that sounds good.
Sounds really good.
The other is the pulled pork barbecue from Maurice Bessinger's Piggy Park. I got to sneeze here.
Gesundheit.
Thank you. Outrageous hickory smoked pulled pork barbecue slathered in a sweet and tangy mustard-based South Carolina barbecue sauce. Both are fabulous. Dino says Russell's Barbecue, North Avenue, that legendary. You ever been to Russell's?
I haven't had the pleasure.
Oh, man. Here's the thing, though. I don't know. Do you have a preference in your barbecue sauce?
I prefer vinegary.
There you go. You got to go to Russell's.
Yeah. Okay, so they do the vinegary
sauce. Oh, my God. You have to go to Russell's. Place has been there forever. I've been going there since I was a kid. I've been there in a while, but I've been going there since I was a kid. One of my family's favorites. Breaded pork tenderloin, bread dumplings, and brown gravy with sauerkraut at the Czech Plaza in Berwyn.
Oh, that sounds good.
Or the Westchester Inn in Westchester. How about Fat Johnny's at 7242 Southwestern? They serve great Chicago-style dog at good prices. Recommend the Mighty Dog or the Chicago Tamale Dog. Food is served from a trailer. On one of his shows, the late Anthony Bourdain took Andrew Zimmern of Bizarre Foods down to Fat Johnny's and introduced him to the tamale dog, and Andrew loved it. Oh, yeah. Shrimp at Ron of Japan. God, I haven't been to Ron of Japan in a long time. Gale Street Inn's ribs are too fine, but I guess you know that already. That's Patrick on the northwest side. Yeah. Everything at the Gale Street is the greatest restaurant on the planet. George Carr's is my main man. And the ribs, spectacular. All right, a few more signature items here. Iconic signature dishes. The Garrett mix at Garrett Popcorn. If your understanding of popcorn is based solely on the sad dry kernels of microwave bag, then Garrett Popcorn is about to blow your mind. Since 1949, Garrett Popcorn has been serving handcrafted, freshly made kettle popcorn to the masses. Their menu items go for plain or your Aunt Jane, or Buffalo Ranch for your sassy friend. We love the Garrett mix, though, because it's a blend of savory cheddar cheese and creme brulee sweetness of caramel. When I used to go to Hawks games, they were kind enough to set me up in the box very often. And then the food cart, the dessert cart, would come by. And I always got a bag of Garrett's because they always had the Garrett's mix. Egg custards at Santa Ana. At St. Anna. And then tamales from the Tamale Guy. The Tamale Guy. I can't tell you the number of times I've bought tamales from that guy. He used to come to the bars that I hung out in. I mean, if you don't, Tamale Guy goes from bar to bar with a cooler filled with tamales. So, tamale, $5, tamales. So, Tamale Guy rules. All right, there you go. Some signature dishes for you here on 720 WGN. Nick DeGilio's show continues right here. We're going to be joined by the band The Empty Pockets live in studio. We'll chat with those guys and talk about their new tour and their CD right here on WGN.
On the first day we met in those old tangled woods, your wings and your eyes sparkled blue. But as I recall, there was alcohol, so the details might be tangled too. Took my hand, you led
right.
me away from there.
Nick DeGilio's show continues here on 720 WGN. It is a Wednesday morning. We're going to be talking about terms that were popularized by Gen X. We've been playing some classic stand-up comedy from the old Tonight Show, Johnny Carson Show, which you can all watch on Antenna TV. We're going to go back to 1974 and listen to a set that Steve Martin did. Back in the day, we have a round of Know Your Onion coming up at 3:30. That's where Tom will get a couple of people on the line. He'll each play a round of Know Your Onion, and that's where Tom reads you a news headline, and you have to guess whether it's real or it's from the Onion because the news is just weird now. So 312-981-7200. That music that you just heard is by a group who has been in the show several times, and I consider my buddies. They're called The Empty Pockets, and they're in studio right now. We've got Josh Solomon.
Hello, hello.
We have Erica Solomon.
Hello, everyone.
Nate Bellin.
Yay.
And a new member of the, well, not new to my show, but you've been with the group now for a couple of years. The last time we had you guys on, you weren't with the group.
Correct.
And that's new
to the show.
Adam Belasco.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Welcome, everybody.
Hey, great to be here in your fancy 18th floor Ooh. Studio.
It's pretty cool up here, isn't it?
It's gorgeous.
It's very high.
Yeah.
Very fancy.
And I'm one of the only people that actually uses this studio. Most people use Studio A.
Studio A is even better somehow?
Oh, no. This one's better.
Nice.
I'm just saying, because I work out of here. No, Studio A is bigger, and there's like a performance space back there. And all that stuff, but I don't know. And the view I will say this, the view's better.
This view is gorgeous.
You get to see the lake and Navy Pier from the other studio.
I like to go right into views when I'm on the radio. Go right into visuals. That's what I like to do.
Exactly. I think talking about visuals makes good
funny.
Radio.
It's funny because one of the reasons why I'm not fond of that studio is that I'm further away from the producer. You're further away from the producer in that studio.
Okay.
And it's harder to like see the producer or make eye contact. And my connection with the producer, my producer is Tom Hush, who you guys have never met before.
We have not.
Tom. But
I just met him, actually.
You know, he and I have to be connected throughout the entire show. So and it's also, he's on my left, which is easier for me. And in that studio, he'd be on my right and further away.
We totally understand that. I mean,
it's
the
a
way
big
we
thing
set
for
up,
a band.
Yeah, is very important. Like your eye lines and making
I'm
sure you
can
see.
When I'm not on the right.
Oh, it feels weird when you're on the wrong side.
Feels very strange.
I totally agree. I've had to do some spots or, you know, there was a problem with this studio. What was it, about a few months ago? Tom?
Yeah, when the commercial program
crashed. Yeah, and so we had to go into that studio, and I felt like I was like I was on Mars.
Oh yeah,
because you get so used to this. I've been in this studio now since we moved here, you know, a few years ago.
Yeah,
and so I get used to it, and it looks like the studio that I used to work in on the 7th floor. So this is like I'm all set up, everything is set up, and so I had to, and we were right in the middle of a show too.
You had to switch in the middle?
In the middle of the show. Oh. And so we had to run back to Studio A while the engineer came in here and fixed it. And we were in Studio A, and I was like, And I couldn't even set the studio up the way I wanted to set it up because we were in the middle of the show.
Wow.
Yeah. Live radio, everybody.
Woo. That's what you get, baby.
All right. For people who don't know, it's the Empty Pockets. How'd you form? How long you been around? Give everybody the 101 here for the folks who had not heard you guys on my show.
Boy, oh boy. For the Empty Pockets, we formed in 2006 during the Buddy Holly story, where I played Buddy Holly and Nate was the drunk bass player. Joe Monlin in our production, method acting, mm-hmm. of the Buddy Holly story, where we met Erica, who then, Erica and I got married 7 years ago. Yeah. So a lot has happened.
7 years.
Yeah. I joined the band first.
You joined the band first, then you got married.
Good choice.
Yeah. Then you got married.
That's the order of operations.
Right. And now, where are you guys from? Let's go. Where are you guys originally from?
I grew up in Northbrook.
Okay.
Lincolnwood, Niles West High School.
Oh, you went to Niles West.
Niles West.
Did I know that already or no?
I don't know.
Did you go to Niles West?
No. I went to Luther North.
Oh. Home of World Series winning pitcher George Contas, Niles West High School.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Shout out to George Contas.
I went to Glenbrook North, where Jason Kipnis went to high school.
Yeah, maybe we'll get...
New Cub.
Maybe we'll get a little Cub going there.
Yeah.
New Cubby, second base.
I'm trying to remember...
Coming from the Indians.
If anybody famous went to Luther North... Yeah, we got the guy who made the barbecue sauce.
Famous Dave?
Ray? Dave?
Dave?
Was it Famous Dave? Dave?
Famous Dave went to Luther North.
Wow.
That's impressive.
I mean, he's got famous in his name. It doesn't get much more famous than that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's funny.
I was homeschooled in Harvard, Illinois for high school, so.
Yeah. Really?
Yeah, that's true.
Your reaction is exactly right.
No, I know.
Yeah, that's the usual reaction. That's true.
It's usual and justified.
Adam, where are you from?
Connecticut.
You're from Connecticut?
Yes.
What brought you to Chicago?
School. I went to DePaul.
Oh, okay, cool. How long you been here?
12 years?
12 years?
Something like that, yeah.
Cool. All right, tell everybody what instruments you play.
Ooh. So I'm Josh. I play guitar.
I'm Erica. Mm-hmm. I play keys and I sing.
Yep. I'm Nate. I play the bass.
And?
Adam. Drums.
Drums. Okay. All right. Well, listen. We're talking with the Empty Pockets. We're going to hear some music from you guys. We've got a lot to talk about. These guys are always here for a long period of time. You guys still hold the record.
Yes!
You still hold the record for guests that I've had on for the longest.
We were literally just talking about
that
earlier today. It's our most
important.
It was like 3 hours,
I think. It was a long time. It's our most important award and accolade.
We had you on, I mean, because I love talking with you guys. You're a lot of fun. And we love your music.
It's a party.
And also, really quickly, you guys are playing Space in Evanston, which is a great place. But, man, you're opening for Al Stewart.
Al Stewart's our boy, man.
Yeah.
That's right.
Uncle Al.
Yeah.
He's our Uncle Al.
Yeah.
Yeah. I always forget that.
It's crazy, right?
Year of the Cat, baby.
Yeah. He's taking us all over the world. It's the coolest.
It's awesome.
We did the UK last year with Al. We're theoretically doing a cruise in two weeks.
We'll see if that happens. All right, hang on a second, okay? We got the... we've got the wonderful Empty Pockets here, and if you want to jump in, it's 312-981-7200. We'll learn more about them, talk about music and more, and listen to some songs as well. It's Nick DiGilio on 720 WGN.
Against the wall,
was wrong. But I remember that time you saw me in the mirror. I don't think anybody ever saw me clearer.
All right. More from the Empty Pockets. It's the Nick DiGilio Show continuing here on this Wednesday morning. Empty Pockets, terrific band. And the members are here, and it's Josh, Erica, Nate, and Adam.
You did it. That was great.
Yeah. So what's the latest the album that you guys have?
Our latest full studio album is called Tanglewoods. That's what we've been listening to.
Okay.
And then Live in Seattle is our actual latest release.
Okay.
Which is like a live album that turned out really... I've always wanted to release one. And I don't... Maybe we weren't good enough yet or something. It's the first one that turned out good.
Live albums are tricky.
Yeah.
You know, because sometimes they're great and sometimes they're awful.
Bad. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And we were just talking about some great live albums in the past. My favorite live album is UFO, Strangers in the Night.
Mm.
And I always have a bad memory attached to that because I could have gone. It was recorded here at the Amphitheater in Chicago.
Wow. Oh, and you could have been there.
And I had a ticket.
Oh.
But my parents wouldn't let me go because I had a fever of like 104.
Oh. Well, it's probably best you stayed home.
No. You got to be at that show.
104, man. But, I don't know.
Yeah, no, I was real sick and I was so upset because all my friends went.
Oh.
But then it did, you know, and then I get the album and I'm like, man, I could have been at this show.
And it's amazing. Yeah. Drag.
And so that's one of my favorites. Some of the other great live albums. Cheap Trick at Budokan.
Oh yeah,
classic.
Yeah.
A couple of those tracks get played on the radio all the time.
XRT loves
that. It's funny because, you know, I Want You to Want Me.
That, yeah.
The studio version was released and it did nothing.
It did nothing.
And then when the live version came out, boom.
It's great. Yeah. It's a great track.
The crowd noise, the electricity, it's just, it's insane.
The Kiss's career is basically, from what I understand, owed entirely to their live albums.
They had Kiss Alive and then Kiss Alive 2.
Yeah.
And I had both of them. I was in the Kiss Army. I was a corporal, I think, in the Kiss Army.
Really, working up the ranks, or did you get busted down?
No, I don't think they had ranks. But
I was there are ranks.
I was a massive Kiss fan until I hit puberty, and then I went, "What the hell am I listening to this for?" So, you guys been together now for? So you said 2006. That's really cool. And you've been traveling around a lot. You were just telling me that Al Stewart is your boy, as you said before.
That's how I say
Al Stewart, who you know from Time Passages, You're the Cat.
Do it, Josh. Do it.
We usually just say, "Hello, I'm Al Stewart. It's me, Al Stewart."
Yeah. You guys all have an Al Stewart impression
all day long.
Imagine.
We do an Al Stewart impression.
Time passages.
It's like talking to me.
You know,
Al Stewart
does say the most Al Stewart thing you can actually say is he goes, "Are you serious?"
That's true.
And if he says that to you on stage, it means like, "What are you doing? What's
That's
going
cool
on?
Though. I mean, I like Al Stewart. How'd you guys end up hooking up with Al Stewart?
Well, we've been doing this backing up thing for quite a while. So we backed up Bad Company's drummer Simon Kirk
and Kenny Loggins,
Gary Wright,
and it was Gary Wright that led to Al Stewart,
yes.
The Dreamweaver.
So we were backing up Gary Wright, mm-hmm, for his set, and the booking agent added Al to the middle of the bill.
They were like, "How quick can you learn these 12 super esoteric weird songs about history?"
We were like, "Sure, we'll do it."
I don't know.
And
week.
It went well, Al, and we just got along with Al particularly well, and he kept adding us on dates. And now we turn around and we've done like 150 Al Stewart dates. We're doing a tour in May, mm-hmm, hoping that the world doesn't collapse into whatever Corona beer is doing to
us. I think we'll be all right. I think we'll be okay.
Yeah.
So you guys, you worked with Al Stewart. Now you just came back from the UK, or you were in the UK. You did tour in the UK.
We did 21 dates in the month of October, and it was epic.
Wow, I can imagine.
Yeah.
You were telling me off the air that one of the dates you guys did was in Birmingham.
Mm.
Birmingham.
Which, of course, is the home of Black Sabbath.
Of course.
Right? I love the fact that you guys were driving around in the van, and while you were in Birmingham or on your way to Birmingham, you were listening to Sabbath, which is the right thing to do.
Yeah, band geography means something to me. I don't know why. I don't think
where people are from?
Yeah.
Well, what are some of your favorite bands, and where are they from?
Oh, God. My favorite band is Ben Folds 5, and they're from, like, the Chapel Hill area.
Mm-hmm.
Beatles fan, obviously, and we went to Liverpool.
Where are they from?
Cleveland.
And that was awesome.
They're from Cleveland. Cleveland band. That Cleveland sound.
Yeah.
on top of our tour, it was like this musical education of the whole country. We went to Liverpool, visited all the houses of the Beatles.
That's awesome,
man. It rained. Cool. We're in the van. It's raining because it's always raining. It's England.
And they have a song called Rain.
And we're driving to Manchester.
Yeah.
And, of course, we're listening to a band I don't like very much, but they're from Manchester. But it fits perfect. Like, we're listening to the Smiths because it's like, it's and it fits perfectly together. You sort of are seeing like what where this music came from. You know?
Isn't there a better band from Manchester?
Well, we listen to the Stone Roses as well. And
I'm not a Smiths guy.
They're not great.
Tom's looking at me like I'm nuts.
I like the Smiths.
He's giving you a hard stare, huh?
Smiths are great.
It's hipster stuff.
I think the Smiths are phenomenal. I love the Smiths.
Oh, I couldn't remember which direction. Adam has strong opinions about music, so it could have gone either direction there. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, I don't care for it. Morrissey makes me nuts.
Yeah, Morrissey's a nut job.
He makes me nuts.
He's problematic.
I will tell you this. I did have Meat is Murder, and I did have Queen is Dead.
Classic. Both back, great
back,
albums.
Back in the 80s, and I listened to him every once in a while, but I've grown tired of Morrissey and his antics.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I just, you know, sometimes he just doesn't show up to a gig.
I understand that.
That's not cool. That's weird. What's cool about that?
Outdoor gigs, he forbids meat to be cooked anywhere in the vicinity. Like, seriously, like he played Lollapalooza, right?
I think it was Riot Fest.
Riot Fest.
And like you couldn't I remember cook reading meat about it. During the hour of his set or something.
No meat could be cooked.
That was the compromise.
So was it because he didn't want the smell? Or was it because he was like, no flesh would be burned? I think it's a combination of both.
Meat is murder, man.
It's meat is murder.
Well, I mean, he released an album called Meat is Murder. I think you're making a point there.
You'll wait to see that till I'm off stage.
That's not really a Morrissey accent. I can't do a Morrissey accent.
Do you like any bands from Chicago?
Yeah, I love Chicago bands. Like, like small time local bands.
No.
I shout out all my friends' bands right now.
I like all those guys that no one's ever heard of.
I do like some of those bands.
They're technically not from Chicago. They're from Rockford. But Cheap Trick is, the local heroes as far as I'm concerned.
Wilco
is awesome.
Ides of March.
Ides of March, Chicago.
Ides of March is real cool.
Jim Croce's not from Chicago, is he?
No, he's not. No,
oh, no. I'm sorry.
You're thinking of Steve Goodman.
I was thinking of Steve Goodman.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
Steve Goodman. Yeah. Delightful.
I got you, bro.
What are other great local bands?
Smashing Pumpkins.
Smashing Pumpkins. Isn't I mean, like Muddy Waters is.
Well,
sure. That goes way back.
If we go down the blues road, we'll be here till noon.
Right, correct. Right.
I got time.
It's Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN, and that's the group The Empty Pockets. They're playing at Space in Evanston on May 1st.
Woo!
And they're opening for Al Stewart.
Wow, it's me.
Yeah, and that's The Empty Pockets. And so your latest release is the live, and you said it was Seattle?
Live in Seattle. It's actually at an Al Stewart show.
Mm-hmm.
It's a crazy show we do because we open for him around the world, and we're his band.
It's a long night.
It's a long night.
And I sell merchandise in between.
Yeah.
And
you
after.
Do you? In
and
between.
Afterwards, yeah.
Yeah, okay.
You got to sell those.
So, what was I going to ask you? In Seattle, when you guys were driving around Seattle, what were you listening to?
Ooh.
Because there's a lot of bands out of Seattle.
We don't play this game much in the U.S. We should be.
I mean, I'm a huge Nirvana fan.
And I'm obsessed with Brandi Carlile.
Mm. You know what we're doing in Seattle is we're all mentally getting ready for the hugest, most aggressive rats you've ever seen.
That's
right outside the triple door.
That load-in is...
That's what I'm doing
when I'm in Seattle. PTSD from that
load-in. Wait, hold on a second. So there are giant rats when you guys are loading in?
Aren't they
every
rats?
Every time. It's unbelievable.
They're rodents of unusual size.
There are RUSs. Absolutely.
In every way.
And it's always a toss-up as to how many of them are dead at any given time.
But they are running, and they are not afraid of humans.
So actually, come to think of it, we're not playing...
Yeah, rats tend to scurry.
Yeah.
There's a lot of scurrying going on. Yeah, yeah. And so you're trying to keep them out of the trailer while you're loading stuff out.
Listening to music in my
neighborhood by the where I live by the dumpsters, we had a little issue for a while.
It happens.
And you go out and throw the garbage and you run out. It scares the crap out of you.
This alley has like 12 dumpsters in a row.
That's
so
it. There you go.
Yeah. It's like a paradise.
It's feeding time.
Oh, it's a great Thai place. It really is a delicious Thai place.
It's amazing.
It's amazing Thai place.
It's an alley where you want to tuck your pants into your socks.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
I understand. Yeah. I understand.
So I think we're not listening to music in Seattle. We're like meditating on that.
Getting ready.
If I were driving around in Seattle, Hendrix would probably be the first one. that I would pick.
Can I bring something up that really bothered me today?
I prefer he didn't.
We put musicians on a spectrum of like real players to total monsters.
Sure.
And they put Jimi Hendrix like in the middle of the spectrum as if he wasn't.
First of all, I should tell you
that I hate listening to Band of Gypsies in the car on the way home from rehearsal today because I was so mad about that.
You're like, this guy's a genius.
All right, we got a break here, you guys. Hold on a second. Empty Pockets are here. We got more to talk about. We'll listen to some of their music too. And it's always a lot of fun to have these guys, and it's always a good time. 312-981-7200 is the phone number if you would like to join us on WGN.
I'm holding out for Deerfield, maybe till the end of the summer.
All right.
I'm saving all my money.
Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We're live in the Skyline Studio, 18 stories above beautiful downtown Chicago. That music that you're hearing is The Empty Pockets. And Josh and Erica, Nate and Adam are here in studio. Tell me about your writing process. Who writes the songs and how does that work?
It's all over the board, really. Yeah. You know, a lot of times somebody comes with, I think I come with a lot of them, the seed of an idea. That last song that you were just playing is called Deerfield, which is about Deerfield, the suburb, because like everyone in my life moved to Deerfield one day. Like they had
literally everyone.
They had friends,
my brother,
colleagues, family. They all got
they
up.
Just,
and, it was an exodus,
a mass exodus to Deerfield.
To Deerfield, yeah. Yes. So we wrote that seed happened that way. Actually, we have an interesting agreement, you know, between each other, us four and our producer, sound guy. We all split songwriting royalties down the board evenly for everything.
That's nice.
And it's not just like nice, which I think it is a good idea for a lot of reasons, but we all do the songwriting process for us, I think, is like long. You know, we bring a seed in, excuse me.
And it evolves and we all bring something to it. And so that, why not be, you
does
know?
It does it usually start with a riff or does it usually start with the music first or do the lyrics pop in?
All those different ways, yeah. It could start with a riff, and we could have a riff for 2 years that we jam, and we're like, oh, it's so good, and no lyrics work. We still have some of those that maybe will never be anything more than a thought, or sometimes it is an idea.
Like a nugget of a lyric that, you know, drives an entire song.
Yeah. Or sometimes it's something that's, like, almost finished, and it literally is just like, we need to just put, like, a little tiny polish on this.
Yeah.
You know, because the idea is either so simple and beautiful and elegant that we just want to kind of give it a little push or something. But each little addition that we put on, we feel as like a group is like a positive addition in the songwriting process, not just in like the recording process.
And, you know, it's difficult. It's difficult because to write a song on demand is so much harder than to just like let it come to you. I feel like the best ones happen in 2 seconds and then they're done.
Yeah, yeah.
What's hard is you're like, okay, let's do 10 more of those.
Yeah.
Yeah, right.
It's the Empty Pockets that we're talking with, and their next local show is at Space in Evanston.
Ding.
Which is a great space.
It is.
It is, indeed.
And it's Friday, May 1st, opening for Al Stewart.
Oh, yeah.
Yes. All right. So, you, Erica, you wanted to ask me about a movie or tell me about a movie thing?
So I follow you on Facebook.
Okay.
You have sometimes an opinion about a movie or two.
Really?
Or three.
Really?
And it's one of my favorite things. And there's this movie that was critically acclaimed, and it's about a musician. So everyone in my life was like, you must.
I know exactly
and
where
Josh
you're going
has been
with this.
Begging me to watch
he's
it for
trying to figure out.
Year.
He's trying to figure out. Tom, you're trying to figure it out? It's a movie that everybody loved, I hated, and it's about a musician.
Because it's not chronologically accurate.
It's not historically accurate at all. It's a 2-hour lie.
So this
is this
review,
Bohemian Rhapsody?
It's Bohemian Rhapsody.
Oh, I was going to say Braveheart, but
Bohemian Rhapsody.
Yeah, I was going to say Guys and Dolls. Yeah.
So you didn't like it at all, I remember.
I hated it.
So tell me, I want to be refreshed onto why you hated it so much so I can't
everything in that movie is a lie. The timeline is wrong. When Freddie performed at Live Aid, he was not yet diagnosed.
Sure.
With HIV,
that
and
I
yet you know they you know
they
that,
use
that
it
whole
as like
thing.
A
he never was he never had to beg to get back into the band. That didn't happen. It's just all of it was just unbelievably historically inaccurate. And although Rami Malek did a nice job, I will say that
sure.
He did a nice job. You know, it's an interesting performance.
And he didn't write it.
No, he didn't. He did win the Academy Award, but I just hate it. I hate because I love Queen.
Yeah.
I love Queen.
Me too.
I think Freddie Mercury is one of the greatest frontmen in the history of music and one of the greatest voices in the history of music. And to have his memory just be besmirched like that, I was angry during the entire movie. I was just really angry.
Your anger feeded into me, and now I have the same anger about that movie, and I won't
and
let
you,
it go.
And you didn't even see it?
No.
No. It's funny because, you know, another one of my favorite musicians ever... they did a biopic of him last year, and it was Rocket Man,
which was
about Elton John. And
what did you think of that one?
Loved it.
Oh, okay.
The thing about Rocket Man is it's a musical fantasy, so they could take liberties with
it.
You know what I mean? Like it's established as a musical fantasy in the opening scene.
Yeah.
And I didn't know it was going to. They did not advertise Rocket Man as a musical. It's a flat out musical, and it's not just it's not just the
it's
Elton
not
John
like a
character.
Jukebox musical.
No, it's not like. I mean, it's not like just the Elton John character sings.
Right.
Because Bryce Dallas Howard plays his mom. She sings in it. All the characters sing.
So it's like magical realism musical.
It's a musical.
Cool.
And
That's
they
cool.
didn't advertise it that way. And I loved it. And I happen to be a massive Elton John fan for a certain period.
That I'll watch.
There's a certain period. Because there's a period of time like right around 83, 84 when it started to fall apart. And I'm not a fan of his recent stuff.
Yeah.
But that period but from the late 60s into like 1980, 81, unbelievable.
Yes,
him and Bernie Taupin wrote some of the greatest songs of all time.
True.
And so I was so glad that they did not ruin Elton John and Rocket Man. But they did. You know, they did a bad thing to Freddie Mercury.
I'm putting that on my list.
Yeah, you should. You should. So Adam, when did you start playing drums?
In fifth grade, I got a snare drum. Joined like the school band, you know.
Uh-huh.
And then for my 12th birthday, I got a kit.
Yeah.
And started playing drum set.
You got brothers and sisters?
I have one sister.
Is she a musician?
No.
Anybody in your family?
No, my dad plays acoustic guitar,
mm-hmm.
but... Not much of a musician.
What attracted you to the drums? I play drums. So
right on.
Yeah.
Well, like in fifth grade, it was like the one rock and roll instrument that was being offered. Well, I guess you know, like saxophone is kind of rock and roll and whatever.
Yeah.
But I don't know. It was like the step before a drum set in fifth grade. You know, music class.
Mm-hmm.
So. I chose that one.
Do you have any drummers that influenced you? The drummers that you really love?
Oh, my God, yeah. I'm obsessed with Stuart Copeland.
He's unbelievable.
Is that Miles Copeland's brother?
That's one of his.
Yep. Stuart Copeland is also one of the most unique drummers
ever.
Like, his style of play is really interesting. And the Police, I went to high school between 1979 and 1983. And
it's a sweet spot.
The first Police album came out in 1979. The mm-hmm. last Police album came mm-hmm. out in 1983.
Yep.
So my entire high school revolved around the Police. Yeah. I was obsessed with the Police.
Yeah.
They're one of my favorite bands of all time.
Yeah, same.
Yeah.
Love them.
Yeah. What do you think of Carter Beauford?
Like, it's funny, I just listened to Before These Crowded Streets.
Yeah.
By the way, he's
the drummer for Dave Matthews Band.
And he comes up a lot. Like, people love him.
I love him.
I'm not a huge DMB fan, so you know, I always joke, like, he and Travis Barker, people are always like, you must love Travis Barker. You must love Carter Beauford. And, like, they're both great. And I'm not a huge Dave Matthews guy, but I like him. He's great. He's great.
I'm a huge Dave Matthews fan.
Yeah.
I'm one of those people that's seen him multiple times.
Me too.
Sure.
And I love him. I love that. One of the reasons I love Dave Matthews so much is because of his band.
Yeah.
Band is unbelievable.
They're all players. They all play.
Everybody on that stage is insanely talented.
Yep.
And I could watch Beauford play drums all night long.
Yeah.
Well, first of all, he's got like a kit with 800 pieces.
Uh-huh.
I think he's got two gongs.
He does have a lot going on. He has a lot going on.
But the thing about him is his technique is insane.
Yes.
His drumming is great. His fills are awesome. Uh-huh. And he's always smiling and blowing bubbles. That's the thing. He's got a bubble gum in his mouth. He's always having like the best time ever.
Yeah.
And it looks effortless when you watch this guy play drums. It's
unbelievable. And there's some rhythmically complex stuff going on.
Absolutely.
There. Yeah, there's some they do some interesting time signature stuff.
Absolutely.
And they're kind of all over the place. And they play for like a long time.
They do. And it's a different set every time.
Yes.
Like, I've gone to multiple shows in a row. I've seen Dave Matthews like three times in a row, and it's a different set, except for like if they're pushing a couple of hits, a couple of singles. Yeah, but other than that, it's like a completely different set every night. And that's one of the things I love about Dave Matthews.
You know, it's funny you say that, the Big Kit. One of the cool things that happened when Adam joined the band, Nate and I jammed with Adam for the very first time, and he set up his drums, and he sets up a snare, a kick, a hi-hat, one cymbal, and a floor tom, and that's it.
That's it?
The entire kit.
Yeah, that's
and Nate
kit.
And I have always had like a very much spoken like, you know, you better be better than your gear. Like, I don't want you better not come into thing and set up for half an hour your guitar
and then be
playing with the pedals more than you can play.
It's easy to take down after a gig.
Yes. And so we tour like that. You know, you should see crews around the country, because Nate doesn't play with a bass amp anymore. He plays into just a direct box. Crews around the country go like, thank you guys so much.
Life
is hard.
Great.
Yeah.
See, and you're working with sound guys, too, who are just, some of them have no patience.
No.
Like, you come in and they're like, oh, God, they've been doing it. Have I ever told you guys the G.G. Allin story?
I don't know.
Oh no! Okay,
no.
I'll tell it again. Tom, we'll take a break and we'll come back and I'll tell the Tom has already heard the G.G. Allin story.
Sorry, Tom, you're going to hear it again.
Now, I want you to know this is an absolutely true story. You're going to think no way. But do you guys know who G.G. Allin is?
No, I'm excited.
Right, I'll explain that. I'll explain everything to you. And for those who are regular listeners, you're going to hear the G.G. Allin story again. All right, Empty Pockets are here. Great group of guys. Great band. They're playing Space in Evanston. And that's Friday, May 1st. They're opening for Al Stewart. More with them right here on 720 WGN.
On a morning from a Bogart movie, in a country where they turn back time, you go strolling through the crowd like Pete DeLauro. She comes out of the sun in a silk dress, running like a watercolor in the rain.
We have the backing band for Al Stewart here this morning, so Tom decided they would play Year of the Cat. It's the Empty Pockets, and they open for Al Stewart as well, doing double duty. It's Nick DiGilio here. We are live in the Skyline studio here until 4 o'clock. Coming up, we play some classic stand-up from The Tonight Show, the Johnny Carson Show, which you can see on Antenna TV every night, and we've gone back and played some classic stand-up. Tonight, it doesn't get more classic than Steve Martin, so we're going to listen to some Steve Martin. Play a round of Know Your Onion. That's coming up, and the news is next from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom. I'm joined in studio by the Empty Pockets, who are here, and it's Josh, Erica, Nate, and Adam. They've got a local show here at Space in Evanston on May 1st, opening for Al Stewart.
That's me.
So we were talking about sound guys being happy that you're just you can break down your drums in like 10 minutes.
Yeah, everyone's happy
as opposed
about it.
To 45.
Yep.
You know, I can't imagine how long it takes the roadies to break down Carter Beaufort's set. I can't even imagine. Or Neil Peart. We lost Neil Peart.
Mm. Yeah.
Yep.
God bless him.
Think about how many drum cases they need.
Yeah. No, exactly. I mean, there's probably just a whole truck just for the kit.
Yeah, if they were smart, what they would do is put the whole thing on a pallet and then just move it with a pallet jack, get it into the trailer, and then just bring it back out for him next time.
Never break it down.
No. It's too wide.
What? Yeah. Too wide. Get out of here.
You couldn't fit that on a standard.
You could not. I agree.
You don't put that on it.
So we're talking about sound guys, okay? And one of my favorite stories involving sound guys, and you guys work with sound guys all the time. Some of them can be a little surly. Some of them are just over it. You know what I mean?
Like, well, they have a thankless job sometimes.
I totally agree, and I can understand that. Now, here's one of the stories that proves that they have a thankless job.
Sure.
Okay, G.G. Allin was this notorious, insane punk rocker from Chicago who would cut himself on stage. He would come out naked. He would defecate on the stage and then throw it at the audience.
Oh,
He always said that he was going to kill himself on stage.
Fun guy.
Good guy.
And they made a documentary. What's it called again?
Hated.
Hated. And it's the story of G.G. Allen. Actually, Todd Phillips directed it, the guy who would go on to do the Hangover movies.
Wow.
And band, what the hell, the Joker. Joker.
Band of Jokers. And
so anyway, so there's a documentary about this punk, this maniac. I mean, this guy was a maniac. G.G. Allen was nuts. And the fact that people would go and see him, I always found strange because there was a chance that you would get hit with poop.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And so I don't know. And yeah. And the music was terrible. I mean, it was just aggressive and lousy,
right,
and really noisy and punk rocky. So he was playing at a place called the Lounge Axe. And the Lounge Axe is now Lincoln Hall.
Oh, yeah.
That's where Lincoln Hall is now. It used to be Lounge Axe. Lounge Axe was this legendary sort of punk bar. It was basically a dive bar, but a lot of bands played there, and it became a legendary place. And when Lounge Axe closed, a lot of people in that neighborhood were really sad. But yeah. Lincoln Hall rules. But anyway, so he's scheduled to play there, and the sound guy's there for the sound check. It's about 5 o'clock in the afternoon, so there's nobody in the bar. There's just people behind the bar, like cleaning glasses, and
right.
You know, the stools are being brought down, and they're just, you know, on top of the bar, and so it's still light out. You know, you're not going to be in Lounge Axe during the daylight, so. The sound guy's waiting and waiting and waiting for G.G. Allen to show up, and he's late. And first of all, sound guys don't like it if you're late, and you guys can attest to that, being mm-hmm. in a band. So he's already annoyed at this guy, and you know, and G.G. Allen had this reputation for being a lunatic, so this guy's clearly not looking forward to working with this moron. So G.G. Allen comes in, he's loaded, okay? He comes in, and he's being real difficult with the sound guy, and he goes up on stage, and he takes off all his clothes. So now he's naked. And he takes a tray of glasses and whips them off the stage, and they shatter in front of the stage, on the floor in front of the stage.
What a beast.
And so this is during the sound check.
Nice.
And the sound guy's just sitting back there, going, you know, like shaking his head. There's broken glass all over the floor. This guy's naked. He stands up on the Marshall stack at the edge of the stage. He takes the microphone, and he sticks it in his butt.
Ugh.
Okay, so he sticks the microphone up his butt. Then he jumps off the stage onto the broken glass. And he's laying there, bleeding, cut all over the place. The sound guy comes out. First thing he says is, "You just bought that effing mic." It's like, this guy's bleeding all over the place. "You just bought that mic." That's a sound
guy,
right?
That's a sound guy.
So here's the rest of the legend is that they kept the G.G. Allen microphone. Okay? They kept it.
Mm.
And if a singer... during sound check,
no.
Would give a hard time to the sound man.
They got that mic.
They would switch out, and you would get the G.G. Allen microphone.
That's punk. That
yeah.
is
that's
punk.
Punk rock.
So I'm that's a true. Imagine... It's a true story. It's an. I mean, that's an absolute. It's a legendary story. I can't. I wish I knew who the sound guy was. That's the. That's the only thing. I wish I knew who the sound. And it was his idea to keep the mic. Is what I understand.
Oh my man. The sound guy's all of us.
Yeah. Well, it's a free mic at that
that's
point.
True.
G.G. Allen paid for
it's
it.
A free
yeah.
mic.
Yeah.
Yes,
yeah,
exactly.
Free
mic.
That's a good point.
That's a free mic.
But
microphone.
It's funny because, like, you know, I'm trying to think. I would love to, you know, whenever I tell that story, I would love to imagine someone who played Lounge Axe going, "Oh no,"
oh,
you know
no.
what I mean? Like remembering giving the sound guy a hard time, and then like, "Oh,
that
no.
microphone did taste weird."
Yeah.
Gives new meaning to the phrase "mic drop."
Yeah. do we want to hear? Do we want to play a song? What song? You guys want to play a specific song? You want to hear something off the live record?
Yeah, let's do it.
Okay, Tom's got to set it up. So this live album was recorded in Seattle. What was the name of the club?
The Triple Door.
Oh, not the Double
not
Door.
Not the Double
nope.
Door.
Yeah. One more.
So
you know it's better.
A much different place.
50% better.
Yeah.
Speaking of a club you don't want to be in
your first show.
Day.
That's the first place I ever played.
Yeah? Was the Double Door?
Yeah.
Oh wow, that's a great! It was a great space.
It really,
it was a really
was.
Great. Space.
Yeah, it was a really great space.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I've asked you guys this because you've been on the show many times. I've asked you what the first concert you ever saw was.
Yeah,
and asked you the first album.
Yeah, that's.
I'm going to have to ask to Adam. Let's while we're waiting for Tom to load up the CD. What was the first album you ever bought?
License to Ill, Beastie Boys.
That's good, man. Look at Tom is so happy.
Yeah, I was probably 10 years old.
Yeah.
I was kind of late to music. I bought probably, I think, Abbey Road the next year, and that everything exploded.
Okay. Was that another Beastie Boys album?
That was Abbey the Beastie Road? Boys' second album.
A lot of people don't know that. And then first concert.
David Bowie at the Mohegan Sun Arena in Connecticut.
You have so much street cred right now.
That's awesome.
Well, actually, I'm kind of lying. If I want to be really, really cool, my parents took me to see NRBQ the year before.
Okay. So technically, it's NRBQ.
Well, like it was at like a county fair or something, and I ran off and like ate funnel cake.
Okay.
So I didn't. I was there, but I wasn't. Okay.
All right, cool. That's a good one, Mo Bowie.
That was the first one that like I bought my ticket to that show.
Yeah, yeah. I'm old. My first concert was probably a band you never even heard of, Black Oak Arkansas.
You know, I was actually just looking at some of their albums.
Yeah.
I acquired an album collection, and I was like, oh, Black Oak Arkansas. I never heard of these fellas.
They only had one hit, and it was Jim Dandy to the Rescue.
Great
Jim
song.
Jim Dandy to the Rescue. People know that probably from Dazed and Confused. That would be where most people know it from. They play it when they're being chased.
I know it from.
Yeah.
That makes sense.
And then first concert, that was Black Oak Arkansas, but Bad Company opened for them.
Nice. Oh, sick.
And it was before the first album came out, so nobody knew who they were.
Oh, wow. That's amazing.
My dad was with me, and he was a big, really big fan, still is a huge fan of Free.
Oh, yeah? Yeah.
And so when he saw Paul Rogers walk out, my dad's like, oh, my God, that's Paul Rogers from Free.
Yeah.
Wow.
And then they played the entire Bad Company, basically the entire Bad Company album before we had ever even...
Wow. Which is basically like amazing. A greatest hits
it's like
album.
Greatest hits. Phenomenal. It's ridiculous.
Yeah, it's ridiculous.
We got to do two Bad Company shows this summer.
Oh, you did?
Which was insane.
We opened at Festival of the Lakes in Hammond, Indiana for them, and we opened for them...
At Ribfest.
At Naperville Ribfest.
Oh, wow. I gotta say, we've done a lot of the 70s rock star circuit.
Yeah.
Paul Rogers has all of it. 100% of his voice. It's unbelievable.
Again, we were talking about great rock and roll
voices.
One
of the best.
Mm-hmm. Unbelievable, that guy.
Unbelievable.
Okay. You know what? Do you want to play it after the news, Tom? We'll play the song after the news. So that way you can pick a song. Tom can get ahead of
it already. After the news.
So we'll do that. So I forgot. Let's remind me what your first album was.
My first album that I spent my own money on was August and Everything After by the Counting Crows.
Okay. It's a great one. I love that.
Yeah. Cool. Concert?
The first concert was technically a Dr. John concert when I was 6 months old.
That's, very cool.
That's okay. My folks.
What about you, Erica?
Sheryl Crow, Tuesday Night Music Club.
Mm-hmm.
My first concert was... Lilith Fair.
Was Sheryl Crow there?
I don't think she was there. It was definitely Indigo Girls and Sarah McLachlan. Mm-hmm. And
that's Lilith Fair, all right.
That's
right down the middle of the barrel.
That's Lilith Fair.
I got picked up and it was great.
All right, what about you?
Zero Shame on the album, Middle of Nowhere.
Great album.
Hanson.
Great album.
Uh-huh.
I had some shame in the middle, but I'm over the shame.
Okay.
And the Beach great Boys album. Which was didn't have Brian Wilson in it. It
yeah,
was fine.
But that
it
was your first that was your
it
first
was very
yeah. My first album was Paranoid Black Sabbath.
Oh, nice. That's a good, one. That's a good album.
What about you, Tom? First concert?
First concert was Heart, Cheap Trick,
ooh,
and Journey.
Very
that's cool. Right. That's right. Concert. That's phenomenal.
We were the youngest people there by about 30 years.
That's killer.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah, I was 15.
That sounds fun.
And then first album, pretty sure it was Pink, Misunderstood.
Wow.
Nice.
That album
started.
Was a huge
it's album. It's also too. A good album.
Pretty good.
I'm a fan of Pink.
She's got
Pink,
an incredible voice.
She does. And she can also do acrobatics.
Yeah, yes. She's very cool.
While
my
singing,
babysitter
which is...
bullied me because of it. He bullied me and then gave me a copy of Led Zeppelin 1.
Well,
he wasn't wrong on that. He shouldn't
have bullied you, but the album choice was right.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Empty Pockets are here. You guys are going to hang out after the news here.
You know
we'll hear some music and we'll talk a little bit more. Their next show is at Space in Evanston, and that's May 1st. They're opening for Al Stewart, and we'll talk more with the Empty Pockets after the news, which is coming up on WGN. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. Hey, we are here until 4 o'clock. Coming up, we are going to play some classic stand-up from Steve Martin. Steve Martin, 1974. This is from The Tonight Show. We always play stand-up stuff from the Johnny Carson show, which, again, you can see on Antenna TV every weeknight. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. I am joined in studio by our friends, the Empty Pockets, Josh, Erica, Nate, Adam, are here hanging out with us. We're having fun talking about a bunch of stuff. And your next local show is Space in Evanston on Friday, May 1st, opening for Al Stewart, which is pretty cool. You guys have shows in between now and then?
Well, I hope so.
Okay.
We're aiming at it.
We're supposed to get on a cruise in a couple weeks.
Oh, right.
With the Moody Blues and Art Garfunkel.
The Zombies. And well, they're all old, so that's an issue.
Yeah.
And then, you know, cruise is like a dirty word for the last week.
Right. That's true. Well, hopefully you guys will be able to do it. That would be, because that sounds like a great lineup, too.
And then that date at Space actually kicks off our sort of like our May tour if it continues.
Yeah, because Coachella just got moved from... couple weeks from now till October, so we'll see what happens in the world.
Yeah, okay. Well, that's the Empty Pockets. So you guys have released a live CD.
Yeah.
That's your latest one, and it's the Empty Pockets live in Seattle. And so we want to hear a song from this?
Yeah, one of the cool things about this track we're going to play, I Am Strong, is it's on our album called Voices, and I sing it. I wrote it, and I sang it, and originally I was like, Erica, you should sing it. And then, I don't know.
I think I said, no, Josh, I like the way you sing it.
But Erica's an objectively better singer than I am, so it's a matter of just getting her to do it. And we changed the key, and we started doing it with Erica singing it. So this is actually the only version recording that exists with Erica singing the lead.
Okay. And again, what's it called?
I Am Strong.
All right, let's hit it.
Good evening, everybody. We appreciate you.
Stay strong, y'all. Thank you.
Houston. Y'all have a great evening.
Nice. You have such a great voice.
Thanks, Nick.
Yeah. That's The Empty Pockets and their live CD. You guys have a website and all that stuff?
Oh, yeah.
TheEmptyPockets.com.
TheEmptyPockets.com. Can they get your music through there?
Oh, yeah.
Okay. So The Empty Pockets live in Seattle right there. That's great. That was a great song.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Really, really great. We have a text here from Squat. He's a regular listener.
You say.
What's up, Squat?
How's it going, Squat?
It says, hey, Nick, Tom, Erica, Josh, Adam, and Nate.
Mm. Very formal. Very nice.
Very nice.
Any chance of any vinyl being printed, or is it just too costly? I am a big, big fan.
So it's funny you ask, because we are printing our vinyls right here in Chicago, Illinois, at Smashed Plastics.
Ah, yes.
Just finished a pressing. We got some new vinyl out on the website. But there was a terrible fire that has ruined like the global supply of like this piece that goes in the beginning of the vinyl mastering process. So the supply is going to be down for the next year or so. But we have like a couple hundred vinyl.
So get them while you can.
Get them while you can. So again, this is the website.
Yeah.
Okay, Squat, just go to the empty the empty pockets and empty bottle.
You're the best, Squat.
I was thinking I'll meet you at the empty bottle in half an hour with a vinyl.
Yeah, we could drop off a vinyl.
Oh, cool. Okay. The empty bottle? Yeah.
I like that place.
Yeah, I do too. I haven't been there in a long time, but I do like it. Okay, empty pockets are here. We'll talk a little bit more here, and then at 2:30, we'll have some classic stand-up from Steve Martin. And we also are going to talk about terms that were popularized by Gen Xers. And a Know Your Onion. Know Your Onion is Tom is your host, and we get two callers in. They each play a round. Tom will read a news headline, and you have to guess whether it's real or it's from the satirical newspaper, The Onion, because sometimes it's so weird you can't tell what's real and what isn't anymore. Okay, I'm sorry, what were we saying?
I was hoping that game was a taste test of onions, and you had to guess what kind of onion was.
No.
But it's not.
No, it's not. That's a reference to the fake newspaper. The
Fair onion. Enough.
Okay. All right. Empty Pockets are here. We'll talk a little bit more with these guys and then wrap it up on 720 WGN. The Nick DiGilio Show, continuing here on 720 WGN. We are live in the Skyline Studio here until 4 o'clock. We're going to be talking about terms that were popularized by Gen Xers. Got a round of Know Your Onion coming up. And we also have some classic stand-up from The Tonight Show, The Johnny Carson Show, which you can watch on Antenna TV every night. From 1974, vintage Steve Martin. That's like before he really took off.
Let's Get Small, everybody.
Yeah, what a great record. I knew every word on that album.
I think I've seen the Johnny Carson bit you're referencing that you're going to play,
yeah.
And it's hilarious.
Yeah, well, he's, you know, Steve Martin. I saw him, it's so crazy because I'm still a Steve Martin fan, but like back in the 70s when he first hit, you know, with the arrow through the head and the banjo, and being so, and I was obsessed, and still am, with Saturday Night Live, and I started watching Saturday Night Live the very first episode in 1975.
Wow.
And I watch it every week. I DVR it every week, even if it's...
I see your reviews.
Yeah, no, I love it. I'm obsessed with it. And he was such a regular feature on Saturday Night Live. Some people actually thought he was a cast member.
Right.
There were people who actually thought he was a cast member. But I saw him on the Let's Get Small tour. He sold out for two nights. He sold out the Chicago Amphitheater.
Wow. What is this, like mid-70s then?
78 maybe?
Wow.
Jeez.
You know what's cool about Steve Martin is that a whole L.A. Canyon thing that he's hanging out with all the musicians, too.
Yeah, well, he's a musician. He has a band.
Of course, the band.
Steve Canyon Rangers kill it.
Yeah,
but even in the 70s great. That he was with the guys who became Eagles. Yeah. It's just such a cool...
And at that time, like earlier in your career, like right around this time in 74 before he took off, I mean, he started out as a comedy writer. He wrote on the Smothers Brothers Hour.
Right.
He wrote comedy for many different TV shows. And then he started doing stand-up. And his sense of humor was so weird. You know, now it's like, oh, it's Steve Martin. But like at that time, you'd be like, what's going on? And then, you know, his stand-up takes off, and then he does King Tut.
Ugh.
And goes right through the roof.
Genius.
Like, I remember the first time he did it on Saturday Night Live. And, you know, for people who weren't around, the King Tut exhibit was monstrously popular. Like, you would have to wait in line for hours to see it. I went on a school field trip to the Field Museum to see it, and it was how many people were there was unbelievable,
crazy.
So it was a huge craze, and so for him to do this King Tut song at that time, of course it's going to take off.
Right.
But yeah, no. So we got some vintage Steve Martin from 1974. We like to play stand up.
Do you like his new?
That's great.
I guess it's not that new. He did that stand up special with Martin Short.
Oh yeah, they're great. I saw him live. I saw him together. Both those guys are hilarious.
Adorable.
Yeah.
An evening you'll forget for the rest of your life.
Exactly. That's exactly right. Yeah. They're great. They're two comedy icons. Both of them. Yeah. You know. I mean, Martin Short just all the way back to SCTV, the stuff that he did on SCTV, and he did one season on SNL, yep, which was a crazy season, because that was the season Billy Crystal
was
on.
Christopher Guest. That's a crazy season.
Randy Quaid.
Oh, my God.
Joan Cusack.
Yeah, that's the free agent season. It's like an early 2000s Cubs roster. You know, yeah. So you bring in all... You
and it was only one season.
Shell out the money.
Those cast members only lasted one season, except for... Lovitz. Right. He was the only Lovitz in some other classic years.
Yeah.
I like John Lovitz too. It took me a little while because at first I was not. He rubbed me kind of the wrong way when I first saw him on the show.
He'll do that.
As years went by, I went, you know what? I appreciate Lovitz.
He's one of the one side or the other. Where do you land on the David Spade?
I'm pro David Spade as well, but people can be
very...
Well, I know, because it's kind of a one joke. He's a snarky little bastard.
I love him.
Oh, I think he's funny. I think he's very funny. And the Hollywood Minute?
But you don't like Mulaney.
I do not like John Mulaney.
And I think it's a similar bit.
Here's the thing. Mulaney, I don't know what it is about Mulaney. It's his delivery, because I think he's a brilliant writer.
I think he bugs you in the same way Ferris Bueller bugs you.
I guess. He's just smarmy.
It's like privileged white kid.
It's that same kid.
But Mulaney has written some great stuff.
I love him.
Yes.
And I mean, that Lobster in the Diner thing, the time before he hosted, and then the airport sushi.
The airport sushi is so funny.
I really liked the uncle got memed one.
Yeah.
And he and Nick Kroll do Oh Hello on Broadway
and bring out
Steve Martin, and it's genius.
Yeah,
it's just incredible.
No, Mulaney, and you know, look. Mulaney is responsible for Stefan. He and Hader created that character, and Mulaney wrote most of the stuff.
That's iconic.
The reason why Hader breaks all the time as Stefan is because what they do in rehearsal, Mulaney will change the jokes without telling him. So he's seeing it on the teleprompter for the cue cards for the first time.
Right.
That's hysterical.
It's hilarious. And it became like one of the things that everybody loves about Stefan is that Hader is breaking.
Yeah.
Right. He puts his hands over his mouth and starts laughing.
Right.
But yeah, you know, I mean, I admire Mulaney as a writer and a comedic mind. It's just the delivery.
Yeah.
Makes me a little crazy.
I wonder if you'll have a Lovitz situation with, like, down the line.
Yeah, down the line, maybe I'll appreciate it.
You know, it's funny because we play music all the time. When we travel in the van, we do a lot of stand-up. We end up listening to stand-up a lot. So we have a lot of stand-up opinions.
I memorized so many stand-up albums. I listened to stand-up albums all the time when I was growing up, because in the 70s they were hugely popular.
Yeah.
And I knew every word I shouldn't have, but I knew every word to Richard Pryor's Wanted.
Oh, my.
It's unfortunate now, but it's unfortunate now what happened, you know, with Bill Cosby being a scumbag, but I knew every word of Bill Cosby's comedy albums when I was growing up.
Oh, the chocolate cake!
And that was great. Give them the chocolate cake.
Those children lied on me.
And Aunt Cheech and Chong. I used to listen to Cheech and Chong all the time. And it was just fun. Hey, speaking of Saturday Night Live, did you guys happen to see... Do you watch SNL at all?
Mm-hmm. A little bit. Yeah.
Okay. You guys are musicians. I was hoping maybe I'd get your point of view on this. Did you guys see David Byrne? David Byrne's performance?
No. I can't give my point of view on David Byrne.
Josh comes from a place of bias.
I don't get it. I don't understand.
Seriously?
I don't get it.
You don't like talking heads?
I don't get it.
Oh,
I don't get
man.
It at all. A lot of I've had this conversation a lot of times. I should just lie about it.
You should lie about it. It would make you cooler.
I saw Stop Making Sense in the theater like every week.
So how was he on SNL?
It was one of the best performances. Well, you wouldn't like it.
I read people loved it. He's barefoot. They're all barefoot. I saw the photos.
One of the best musical performances I've ever seen on that show.
I mean, I love that he's so theatrical. He's great.
I love David Byrne. Yeah. I love him, and I love Talking Heads.
He played
Heads,
a classic Talking Heads hit. What did he play, right?
He did Once in a Lifetime.
Yeah, he did Once in a Lifetime.
Let's go, Bob.
Yeah.
We played that at a wedding once.
We did.
You guys played Once in a Lifetime? You must have hated it if you don't like the
Talking Heads. That's why he hates
it. You know
them.
What?
Oh, that's why.
I was sort of neutral. We learned a few Talking Heads songs, and I was like, more than it ever was. And, I was,
and
what
he had
is
to sing
this?
Them, and it made no sense to Josh.
I don't get
it's
it.
It's a weird, they're a weird group. They're
but he's
very
obviously got
group.
Something to say, but whatever it is that he's got to say, it's just like not speaking my language. It obviously works for a lot of people,
well,
and I dig that.
His is, you know, I would. If you guys haven't seen it, it's on YouTube. His two performances on SNL from a couple of weeks ago. Seriously, I was sitting on the couch going, "This is one of the best live performances I've ever seen on this show."
Wow! And that includes the Blues Brothers stuff.
Yeah,
that they did?
Yeah, absolutely.
She's Sinbad O'Connor.
Yeah. Oh man,
she's my favorite.
What's the SNL performance we always joke about?
Oh, the best SNL performance.
Eric Clapton doing Wonderful Tonight.
He does it
the slowest.
The slow. He's still playing.
It's at a glacial pace.
I don't even remember that.
It's still going on.
It's still happening.
Adam brought a group of DVDs of only SNL
musical
performances throughout the years on like some tour we were doing.
We were talking about some of the best ones in the past. Pearl Jam was amazing when they were on.
Which, what were they doing?
92. It was when the first album came out.
Beginning. Stuff,
we may have watched that one. You know what was really bad?
They did Live in Porch.
Sure.
Elvis Costello stopped
Elvis
and started.
Costello.
Classic. Yeah.
And
classic,
then John Frusciante decides he's going to ruin the Red Hot Chili Peppers one, and it's horrible.
Yeah.
And Anthony is so mad.
Have you guys ever seen The Replacements?
From
the 80s?
No.
Oh,
I
man.
I don't think so, no.
Loaded.
Really?
Oh, loaded. A friend of mine describes the performance. They were completely enough. They were drinking. Who were they drinking with? What was it? Oh, the host, Harry Dean Stanton.
Oh,
they were drinking.
No.
They were drinking with could you imagine that? The Replacements and Harry Dean Stanton getting bombed together.
I mean, that part's kind of fun to imagine.
Yeah, no, it's awesome. But the performance, a friend of mine described the musical performance of The Replacements. They were performing as though they were being chased. That's my favorite description.
That's
of the
hilarious.
They were performing as though they were being chased.
Wow.
Yeah. So there's a lot of great musical performances and bad musical. When Prince did like 10 minutes, when he just did a medley. I mean, Prince.
He's
Prince.
Insane.
He was Prince.
Yeah.
Best Super Bowl halftime ever.
Yeah. He was, oh, man, without Jeez. Question.
In the rain.
Man,
unbelievable.
Yeah. Mesmerizing.
I still think we're going to win in that moment.
And the Bears were in.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. Right. Exactly.
Very special
I'm thinking we're going
to
win this game.
That's right.
Devin Hester's going to score twice more, yeah. is what I'm thinking.
Well, it started off great.
It did.
It started off great.
It looked real good.
Yeah. All right. Listen, that's the Empty Pockets. You guys are great.
I love you,
having
man.
You thank you so much.
It's got to be sooner because it's been over 2 years.
Yeah, we're going to do it sooner.
Got to get back in here sooner than that.
Love you guys.
Josh, Eric, Nate, Adam, yep. They are the Empty Pockets, and they are playing at Space in Evanston on Friday, May 1st, opening for Al Stewart.
Woo!
You can check out their music at theemptypockets.com. Thank you, guys.
Thank you, guys.
Thank
you,
Nate.
All right,
thanks, Nate.
We're going to take a break here, and when we come back, some classic Steve Martin stand-up from The Tonight Show right here on WGN. Clearly not the SNL version. I have not seen that. I'm going to have to watch that performance. So it was good to see the Empty Pockets. I love those guys, man. They're always so much fun, and they're such a terrific band too. You guys should check them out live. They'll be playing Space May 1st with Al Stewart. It was so much fun to have them back. We'll get them back in here sooner than later. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. Nick DiGilio show continues until 4. We're going to talk about some terms that were popularized by Gen Xers, and we got a round of Know Your Onion to play, which, of course, is the game that we play where Tom reads a news headline, and you have to guess whether it's from The Onion or whether it's real. There you go. All right, at this time, every morning now, we've been playing some classic stand-up routines that were taken from the Tonight Show, the Johnny Carson Show, which you can see reruns of on Antenna TV every night, which is just great. One of the best ever, one of the best in the business. And this is from 1974. Let's hear a little Steve Martin.
See, this is not a Vegas act. You know, I'm not Vegas. Like, places I play usually cost like $3 to get in, you know, and people are going, gee, I got $3. I think I'll throw it away. Oh, I can come in here for $3? Oh, okay. But in Vegas, it's like $15 to get in, you know? And there's a reason for that, because the acts are really good, you know? And also, some of the acts get paid a lot of money. That's not the point. The point is that the acts are really good. You know, like you go and you pay the money and you sit down, and the opening act is usually like a singer, you know, and they really keep it moving. That's what you're paying for. You can't understand what they say because it's going so fast, you know, but you're just entertained because you're sitting there going, you know? And they introduce, they say, hello, the Framis Hotel here in Las Vegas brought in is Johnny Duke. Let's bring him out. Hey, thank you very much. We're the time to great the Las Vegas. Blind the light. We got nothing to hit but night. Okay. I like to do some gambling jokes, some more gambling jokes, some mother-in-law jokes, animals, because I gotta be me. Frank's not a personal friend of mine. Okay. Sammy Davis, you're a personal friend of mine. Okay. Steve Martin, I'm a personal friend of mine too. Okay. And now it's time for a little dance. And here we go. Okay. The hills are alive with the sound of music.
The manic energy that he would bring to the stage as Steve Martin from 1974. So it's about 2 years before he really took off, because SNL began in 75, and he started being a regular on that show around 76. And that's when, you know, but by the time Let's Get Small came out, forget it. And then his first movie was The Jerk, which I want to say was 78. So 79. So, but yeah.
Yeah, 79.
Okay. And that, like, put him over the top, and that's when he became, you know, movie star, and then playwright, successful playwright, author.
Banjo player.
I have to say, though, I met him once, and he was a jerk, and it really broke my heart.
Under what auspices did he come to the studio?
He was being interviewed by Roy Leonard. Mm-hmm. He was in town for Picasso at the Le Pan, the play that he wrote. And he was in town to promote the opening of the play. I brought in he had a book that he wrote, which was I can't remember the name of it, but it was a goofy book. It was like in the mid to late 70s when it came out, and so it was at like the height of his goofy arrow through the head, you know, jerk kind of career. And the book was a really silly book. It was a goofy book, and I brought it in, and he refused to sign it. He said, that part of my career is done. I don't even acknowledge that part of my career.
That's tough.
Yeah. Yeah, he was a jerk. And it bothered me, because I worshipped Steve Martin when I was younger. And I still love him, despite the fact that he was a jerk to me. It's always disappointing when someone that you really like turns out to be a jerk. I'll tell you this, you never know what Bill Murray you're going to get. You never know what Bill Murray you're going to get. Yeah, because I've met Bill Murray maybe four times, and two times he was a real jerk, and the other two times he couldn't have been cooler. It's just weird, because and there are all these stories about Bill Murray crashing weddings, you know, and walking into, you know, the story where a guy's sitting in a fast food place like a Burger King or something, or a McDonald's, and Bill Murray just walks in and walks up to his table and takes a bite of his burger and puts it back down and says, you're going to tell this story and no one's going to believe you. And then he walks in.
They'll never believe you.
Yeah, they'll never believe you.
I wonder how long that gag will even last, though, because I'm not trying to say that he doesn't. He will go down in comedy history forever.
Who, Bill Murray?
Yeah, Bill Murray.
Oh, yeah.
But, like, there's going to be one day where he does that to someone on the younger side, and they're like, what the hell?
Yeah.
And, like, push him around.
Yeah.
And I'm not saying that he cares all that much.
The thing that's fascinating about Bill Murray, and I love Bill Murray. I don't know anybody who doesn't love Bill Murray.
Oh. Yeah. Once you show people Bill Murray, they're like, they go ballistic.
But the thing about is I think he has had a fascinating career. Like how he changed and what he's doing now, you know, being nominated for an Academy Award. And, you know, once he started, I think there was a big shift once he started working with Wes Anderson. There was a big shift in what he was doing. I mean, he had done some stuff in the past, but he was mostly known for his comedic stuff and SNL and the comedies that he did and Caddyshack and Stripes and all that stuff. But when he started, when Rushmore came out, that was a big deal. I mean, like, I was like, man, is he good in this? And it was so unlike anything he'd ever done before. So his association with Wes Anderson.
Yeah.
I mean, and God, Wes Anderson's new movie.
The French Dispatch.
8,000 people are in that movie. Like, everybody who's good is in that movie. The cast is endless.
Apparently, it's based on The New Yorker.
Oh, it is?
Yeah, that's the gist of it, is that it's supposed to be a New Yorker-like publication.
Oh, I see.
Everybody works for it. But just a couple of texts here from 815 and 301. The book, was it Cruel Shoes?
Cruel Shoes, that's
Cruel
it.
Cruel Shoes.
Yeah.
Was the Steve Martin book.
That was the book, Cruel Shoes, and he wouldn't sign it. He wouldn't sign it.
At least it meets part of the title, you know? It's
yeah.
Kind of cruel.
And there was a, I'm trying to remember if it came with the, with an al, with it came with an album, but there was an 8x10 that was all over the place that says it was like signed by him. I think it might have come with like Let's Get Small or, you know, one of his other comedy, Wild and Crazy Guy, maybe one of those comedy albums. But it was him and in a suit with a fish sticking out of his lapel, and it signed Steve Martin Best Fishes. I just remember I had that hanging up on my bedroom wall. he's a funny guy, Steve Martin.
Yeah.
Funny guy. But yeah, I mean, it's, you know, that Roy told me, you know, when I came down to meet Bill Murray, that it's like, be prepared because he might not be in a good mood. And I met him when Groundhog. The first time I met him was Ghostbusters 2. That was the first time I met him. Then I met him for Groundhog Day. He was not happy during the interview for Ghostbusters 2, but when he was ecstatic when they were promoting Groundhog Day. But yeah, but again, people were like, you never know what you're going to get with Bill Murray. And I think that's the case with some celebrities. Like if they're in a crappy mood, especially if they're you know, doing a junket, and I don't blame them. Because when you're doing a junket for a movie, for people who might not know, a press junket is when they basically rent out a couple of hotel rooms, they show the movie to a bunch of journalists the day before, and then afterwards, from about 8 in the morning to about 6 at night, the directors, the actors, whoever is promoting the movie is sitting in a hotel room for hours as a parade of journalists come in and do maybe 10, 15 minutes with you, and they all ask the same question. So you sit there and you have to answer like some of the same questions over and over and over again. Now, Dean goes on a lot of junkets, but Dean asks really cool questions. Like he asks stuff that, you know, because Dean's been doing it a long time. Dean Richards is who we're talking about. You know, Dean's been doing the junket thing for a long time, and he knows what these guys have to sit through.
Sure.
You know, like the kind of inane questions that they're going to get that are over and over and over again. You have to describe the movie every 10 minutes to whatever you're promoting. What was the inspiration for the role? All that stuff. And you get standard, like I'm sure that the celebrities who have to sit there for hours mm-hmm. have just a standard book of questions in their head answers that they have in their head that they're just going to spit out. But every time, you know, if you watch Dean, you know, footage, an interview from a junket or if he listens to it, because sometimes he plays them back on his show.
Right, yeah.
He doesn't ask idiotic questions.
No, they're great questions. And I remember there were two that I played back one time while producing his show that were hilarious. Chadwick Boseman, when Black Panther was coming out, because he took him to Wrigley.
He took Chadwick Boseman to Wrigley?
I'm pretty sure that's where he was.
Okay. Because
like, they were out and about. Chadwick was here.
Okay.
And they knew each other from interviewing for 42, I think, the Jackie Robinson movie.
Yeah.
And then Christian Bale, because they were like old they sounded like old buddies.
Christian Bale?
Yeah. I couldn't believe how genial he was with Dean. Him and Dean were just like, they were like buddies. That's because he's, you know.
Oh, good for you!
Never not be funny.
You know, it was really amazing when that came out. What the hell movie was it? It was a Terminator movie, right?
Terminator Salvation.
Right. So when, you know, the whole thing, when they leaked the tape, because that's Christian Bale going off on the director of photography of the movie. And he has a meltdown. He starts screaming at the cinematographer. And it's funny because people were like, you know, I'm sure that whoever leaked it, which was probably the DP, I would imagine the cinematographer is the guy who probably leaked it. Everybody thought, well, this is going to really tarnish his career. And, you know, people are going to think that Christian Bale is a jerk. It might ruin his career. Every single person sided with Christian Bale. Every single person. Maybe they were like, maybe he went a little too far and he yelled a little bit much. But, you know, if a director of photography is so stupid to walk in the sight line or block a light while a guy is trying to do a scene, and Christian Bale's a method actor, he takes it very seriously. And you got an idiot like McGee directing the movie.
Hey, man, Charlie's Angels Full Throttle is a masterpiece.
God.
But I think even for further context, the scene they were doing, he was in water. If I'm not mistaken, and he's getting, you know, it's a Terminator movie, there's shrapnel everywhere.
Right.
So like you said, you know, you got some DP just walking around while he's having to do this for the next 12 hours just to get the shot.
Yeah.
You know, there it is.
Yeah. I sided with him.
I would.
Yeah. I totally sided with him. And I still love this.
Oh, good for you.
Every day of the week and twice on Sundays.
You know, what's really funny is that during that rant, because he's doing in Terminator Salvation, he's doing an American accent. What's funny is during that rant, you can hear him kind of like lose it a little bit and then go British, you know, because he's got like a Cockney accent.
Yeah, it's pretty heavy.
It's a very heavy accent. And a lot of people are like, wait a minute, Christian Bale talks like that? You know, when he won the Oscar, you know, when he won an Oscar and got up there and gave a speech, everybody was like, what's this? You know? What did he win for? The Fighter, right?
For Dickie Englund. Or Englund. I don't know how to say his name.
He won supporting actor for The Fighter.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. He's a great actor.
Amazing.
He's a great actor. So great. Okay. Hey, we got some weather here, and then we're going to do terms that were popularized by Gen Xers. Man, we're going to go back in time here. I'm already looking at the first one, and I'm like, oh, man. So these are terms that you probably, if you can remember, all the stuff that came out because Gen Xers came of age with MTV, John Hughes films, and those 80s cartoons that we all were made to sell toys like the Care Bears. So they came up with their own sort of slang terms. So 312-981-7200. Every time, Donnie Darko. Every single time I hear it. I love that whole sequence. That Donnie Darko, the scene in Donnie Darko with this song in it. Great movie. 312-981-7200 is the phone number if you would like to join us. It's the Nick DiGilio Show live in the Skyline Studio here until 4. Get ready for Know Your Onion coming up at 3:30 as we do every Wednesday morning. And much more. Right now, we are talking about terms that were totally popularized by the Gen Xers, and it's going to bring back a lot of memories. And we're going to be going back into the 90s for this one. So, Mike from Anuka said Gen Xers created the word for something being fantastic as the bomb. Bogus, 779 area code says bogus was a one word popularized by Gen Xers. It is a little introduction for this. If you were born between 1966 and 1980, you're a proud member of Generation X, or Gen X for short. The name Generation X was popularized by a 1991 novel of the same name by Douglas Copeland. Riffing on Baby Boomer, members of Generation X have also been called, in more than a downer of a name, as the Baby Busters. This is a reference to a decline in birth rates after 1965. They came of age with MTV, John Hughes movies, and 80s cartoons like Care Bears. They also came up with they came of age with and helped popularize some truly tubular slang terms. So here they are. Here we go. Popularized by Gen Xers. How about chill pill? Ever say chill pill? Ever had a friend totally wig out on you? Maybe you told them to take a chill pill. That means that you're overreacting or way too stressed. The chill pill metaphorically calms them down. More simply, you can tell someone to chill out, which is an older expression. This is a rhyming phrase playing on the idea of medicines relaxing someone. Recorded in the early 1980s, chill pill is still commonly seen on social media today. Take a chill pill, man. I don't think I've ever said chill pill, like in a conversation of any kind. I've heard it many times, but yeah, chill pill. Okay, how about gnarly? Watch any stereotypical teen surfer flick, and you'll probably hear gnarly. Now, gnarly generally means bent or twisted. So how did this slang for intense or awesome, as in that party was totally gnarly, how did that change? Well, in surfing slang in the late 70s, gnarly meant challenging or frightening, perhaps like the mean-looking waves in the ocean. Slang has a way of flipping bad things into good things, so gnarly evolved to meaning amazing. Gnarly can still refer to bad things too, as in gross or disgusting, like getting a gnarly cut on your knee after taking a spill at the skate park. These contradictory meanings make gnarly a pretty gnarly word. It's also used as a way to poke fun at California surfer dudes, but has also firmly found its place in the slang lexicon. That's another one that I never used. I always associate gnarly, for some reason, I always associate gnarly with surfing. Did you ever use the word gnarly, Tom?
All the time.
Really?
But kind of in that millennial, ironic sort of way.
Okay. I always associate it, like I just said, I always associate it with surfing.
Oh, that's, yeah. I mean, that's the totally first thing. Is. Totally
and skateboarding.
Is. Yeah, dude, that's gnarly.
Because it's the same kind of mentality. And I'm not being judgmental. I'm just saying that that's part of the lexicon of those, you know, two kinds of adventurous people. Mm-hmm. You got your skateboarders and you got your surfers.
Yeah, you
got
to shred the gnar, man.
Yeah. Do they say gnarly in Point Break?
Oh, they gotta.
I don't know.
I'll see if I can find a count if they say gnarly.
I don't know if they say. I've seen Point Break. I've seen Point Break a million times, and I'm trying to remember. If they say no, I think maybe they do. Maybe the kid who sells Keanu the giant surfboard, maybe that kid says it. But I don't think, you know, I don't think Swayze or any of those guys say it. God, do I love Lori Petty. Oh, my God, do I love Lori Petty in that movie. Oh, my God. All right. 312-981-7200. We're talking about Generation X terms. 312-981-7200. Okay, Nick DeGiglio Show continues. Yeah, man. Bee Gees. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We are live in the Skyline Studio, 18 stories above beautiful downtown Chicago. We're here until 4. And then at 4 o'clock, we'll head over to Bradley Place. Our buddies on the TV side, WGN TV, Channel 9 News, early morning news. We'll hear that. And then at 5 o'clock, Bob Surratt has your Wednesday morning drive. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. We've got a round of Know Your Onion coming up at 3:30. First two people through in 312-981-7200 will be our contestants. And you just have to guess whether a news headline that Tom reads to you is real or from the satirical newspaper The Onion, and then you win. It's that simple. 312-981-7200 if you want to join us now, because we are talking about words and phrases that Gen Xers popularized. 312-981-7200. Also, Led Zeppelin got cleared of any plagiarism problems with Stairway to Heaven, and we'll chat about that later on, too. So, we got some texts here. 815 says, the ultimate use of the word gnarly, which we were just talking about, was Sean Penn in Fast Times at Ridgemont High. And, oh, God, I love Phoebe Cates in that movie. Who doesn't? I mean, you can't hear Moving in Stereo by the Cars without thinking of a very specific scene from that movie. 847 has some. Latchkey Kids. Stoked. Oh, yeah, stoked. Man, I am so stoked. Spaz. Was that popularized by Gen X? Spaz is an old one, right?
I mean, it's short for the very kind of now cruel term spastic.
Yeah.
I don't know. I mean, kind of. Yeah, it might have become more popular.
Boss.
I love that.
Yeah.
So boss.
So boss, and I'm so stoked to be boss. Totally awesome.
Totally. Totally.
That's an 80s thing, I think.
Yeah, very 80s.
I mean, you know, do you ever count how many times PJ Souls says totally in Halloween?
I probably should next time. I'll take a notebook out.
Yeah.
And I'll give you the... Do you know, roughly?
Yeah, I won't say anything, but yeah, I know.
Oh, you know, like, down to the number?
I've counted them.
All right. I'm going to watch... that's going to be my project this weekend. I'm going to go Friday night. I'm going to pop in Halloween. I'm going to take out my notebook, and I'm going to count the number of times.
I have done that. That's how much of a loser I am. That's how many times I've seen Halloween. I'm like, well, you know what? Let's make it a little fresh. I'm going to count how many times PJ Souls says totally.
Listen, man. How are sabermetrics in baseball considered cool, but that's like nerdy? Yeah. You know, sabermetrics are the geekiest thing of all time.
You know, I've interviewed PJ a couple of times. She's lovely. And I've met her. She was at Flashback Convention some years ago. I've met her. She's just, she's a doll. And she's in four of the most seminal movies of people around my age. You know what I'm talking about? She's in Carrie. She's in Halloween. She's in Stripes. And she's in Rock and Roll High School. I mean, what?
That's a pretty good streak.
No, that's amazing.
76 to 81 there.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, and she's in The Devil's Rejects.
Oh, yeah, all the, you know... What's his face?
Rob Zombie.
The idiot. He gets a lot of people that are too good to be in his movies.
And lest we forget Breaking Away.
Yeah, she's in Breaking Away. Very briefly in Breaking Away.
Yeah.
You know why? Because she was she was married to Dennis Quaid at that time. That was when she was married to Dennis Quaid. So, but yeah, PJ Souls. Anyway, I've interviewed her a couple of times, and she didn't know how many times she said it. I had to tell her how many times she said totally. How about as if?
Wow.
As if. That's Clueless.
Yeah, as if.
That's from Clueless.
And what was it? Gag Me with a Spoon.
Gag Me with a Spoon.
Very Valley Girl.
Valley Girl from Moon Unit Zappa. From the Valley Girl song.
Mm-hmm.
Douchebag. Everybody still says that.
Yeah, that's never gone away.
It's actually being a lot of people shorten it to D-bag.
Yeah.
Dweeb. Dork.
Mm.
Mental. Oh, that's so mental.
Are you mental? Get the net.
Yeah. All right. Next one in the article here is Headbanger. One of the hallmarks of Gen X culture is its musical contributions, including punk rock and grunge. Enter Sandman, or we mean enter Headbanger. Entering the language around 80 to 85, a headbanger is someone who loves heavy metal music, which expanded in the 1980 to 90s. Heavy metal musicians and their fans came to be known for dancing in a way that their often long-haired heads moved and banged back and forth. These days, the word banger, which is used for a great song, may be more recognizable to millennials than Gen Z. And Gen Z, does that actually refer to a song? Because it's a sausage, and where I come from,
well, bangers and mash.
Yeah,
no. Well, if something's a banger, it's that means that it's just like a real, like it's a song that gets you like moving and motivated, and like it's like a club hit.
I've never used that term.
No, because it's more recent.
Okay.
Oh, dude, that's a banger, man.
Yeah,
that song's a banger.
This is making me feel really old.
I can only imagine.
You know. It's making me feel really old. I feel like I'm 103. Headboy, what about Headbangers Ball, man?
Dude, I watched it like, what was that? Daily, they would show, like, I think that, what was a weekly show, was it?
I'm pretty sure it started out weekly. Sunday nights or something like that, Headbangers Ball was on.
Yeah, I know they would play reruns all the time.
Yeah.
I think it went crazy.
I think it went nightly. I think at one point it went nightly because it was so popular. Remember Adam Curry? No, you're too young.
Well, Adam Curry.
What about Matt Pinfield? He hosted 120 minutes. That guy's smart, Matt Pinfield. He knows a lot about music. That guy.
Yeah.
So, yeah, Headbangers Ball.
Headbangers Ball. That was huge.
I'm trying to remember who the first host was because Adam Curry took over.
Kevin Seal. Yeah.
Okay. That's not ringing a lot of bells.
Well, apparently he did voices for a lot of shows like Dexter's Laboratory, The Powerpuff Girls.
He did? He was on he worked on The Powerpuff Girls?
Yeah, he just did some voices, additional voices.
Oh, okay. All right. We are talking about phrases and words that were popularized in Gen X. Maybe you haven't heard them in a while. 312-981-7200. And get ready because at 3:30 we're going to have you call in, and the first two people in are going to be our contestants for Know Your Onion here on 720 WGN. ELO. They need to cut a check to Funky Town. Who did Funky Town?
Lips Inc.
Yeah. Yeah, they need to cut a check to Funky Town. The same bass line. Mm. All right. I love ELO, though. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. It's Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. A round of Know Your Onion coming up at 3:30. But right now we're talking about words and phrases that were popularized by Gen X. 312-981-7200. Okay, how about the word yuppie? Did you know yuppie is based on an acronym? It's formed from the initial letters of young urban professional, and it was recorded in the early 80s. Fun fact, the early 1980s saw a similar term, yumpie. Y-U-M-P-I-E, based on the phrase, young, upwardly mobile people. And yeah, that one didn't catch on as much. Yumpy?
Sounds like a mascot.
Yumpy the mascot. Yeah.
He's just running around. He's got, you know, white shirt, tie.
Right. But Gritty beat the crap out of him.
Yeah, exactly. My dad definitely would have been considered a yuppie.
Yeah.
Yeah, he was of that age group that Gen Xers were looking
at. He also had a beeper.
He definitely had a beeper.
Yeah.
He might have had two beepers. Who knows?
We define yuppie as a young, ambitious, and well-educated city dweller who has a professional career and affluent lifestyle. Probably the antithesis of someone who says gnarly.
Well, maybe my dad wasn't a yuppie. Maybe he was an old bee. An old urban professional.
The yuppie has been much ridiculed in popular culture. It's absolutely true. Absolutely true. The maniacal lead character Patrick Bateman of the novel and film American Psycho is often described as an extreme yuppie. You think? I hate that book. Get it away from me. Tom just held up that damn book. I love the movie. I hate the book. How about diss? Hey, man, you dissed me. Which rapper has released a diss track lately? All of them, don't they?
Yeah, all pretty much.
Doesn't everybody have at least one or two diss tracks?
Yeah, but really, they came into prominence in the early on in like the 80s. Once you got to that golden era of hip hop, like
yeah,
especially when N.W.A. broke up, those are some of the meanest diss tracks I've ever heard.
You know,
in my life.
No Vaseline is unbelievable. And my favorite scene in Straight Outta Compton, which I didn't think was a great movie. I thought it was okay. The performances were good. Of course, the music was great. And this was a story of NWA. Is the recording, the scene where they're recording No Vaseline, where Ice Cube is recording No Vaseline. And they cut back to the reactions from everybody. Paul Giamatti is finally offended by something. No, that scene that's the best scene in the entire movie. It was one of my favorite scenes of that year. It was so good. Let's see. So diss, D-I-S-S, also spelled D-I-S, is shortened for disrespect. To diss someone is to insult them, to treat them with, well, disrespect. Does that need to be explained? I think people know what diss means, right?
Yeah, I know what a diss.
It's credited to black slang in the 1980s, and it is very much still with us today. Yeah, it's everybody says it. As we can see in its extension to a diss track or a song released by a rapper to clap back at another for insulting them. Some famous hip-hop artists of the Gen X era that made diss tracks, LL Cool J and Ice Cube, to name just a few of the biggies. And what would you say the slang equivalent of the yuppie today? Well, why did the yuppie come back into this?
Odd choice.
How about this one? 708 says, how long has Ease Back been around? I remember using it in high school quite a bit in the early 70s. Ease back. Hey, man, ease back. I had a line in Among the Dead, this play that I was in, like, I don't know how long ago it was, 2002. So it was like 18 years ago. Where this guy is like screaming at me, and so I pistol whip him.
Good natural reaction.
I was a psycho in the show. I was a maniac, and so I pistol whipped because there were a couple married couple, and so this actress Molly Brennan who played sort of my girlfriend in it. And she was a loon in it, had like purple hair and all kinds of crazy stuff, and she was just like messing around with the wife, and me and the husband come back from talk, and she's like groping her and stuff, and the wife is trying to get away, and he starts screaming at me, hey, you're messing around with my wife, and I had the line, easy down, hoss. The guy's name is not Hoss, by the way. Easy down, hoss.
That should be used in a lot more modern language. Hoss.
Well, Hoss is the name of a character on Hoss. Is it Gunsmoke or Bonanza? It's one of those two, Gunsmoke or Bonanza. There's a character named Hoss, H-O-S-S. Easy down, Hoss.
Yeah, it was Bonanza. Dan Blocker
played Hoss, right.
Hoss Cartwright.
That's right.
Hoss.
Easy down, Hoss. How about Hella?
Yeah.
Never. I've always found this ridiculous. We need to take it back to California for this one and to the Bay Area specifically. That's where it came from. Hella is hella versatile. It can be an adverb meaning very, very extremely, as in that pizza is hella good. It can also be an adjective meaning many, many, much, We ate hella pizza. We ate hella pizza last night. Oh, man. Hella is probably shortened from hell of a, as in hell of a phrase used as an intensifier. It's recorded in the early 1980s, though one hell can be found that goes all the way back to the 1600s. Hella is thought to originate in Northern California, likely in black slang in Oakland in the late 70s. In the 80s, hella is notably found in a skateboarding magazine and used by that headbanger James Hetfield of Metallica. He uses the word hella?
Probably at some point in the late 80s, early 90s.
How about trippin'? I like this one. I like this one. Man, you must be tripping. If someone says you're tripping, that means you're acting like a fool, that you're being too excited, or you're too bothered about something. Here are some examples. I'm not tripping over the mess that happened last night, or you got to be tripping to say you're going to ditch me today. This slang was found in the 1980s. It appears to ultimately be related to a psychedelic drug trip, a slang sense which is decades old. So if you're tripping, it's like you're high. Look to a few rap songs and you'll see what tripping is being is how it's being used. In the early 90s, influential rapper Dr. Dre used it in a hit song. How about rock? This is another nod to the rock that enrich the lives of Generation X. If a friend tells you that you rock, take it as a compliment because you're absolutely awesome. The slang verb rock generally means to be excellent, is recorded into the 1980s. Boy, a lot of these came out of the 1980s, huh? But it has a long history, and yes, it's connected to rock and roll music. The name for this hugely influential genre, ultimately rooted in black art and culture, alludes to the rocking back and forth involved in popular dancing to the music. This rock is recorded as far back as the early 30s. Such dancing and music became associated with the ideas of excitement, of energy, of hipness, of sexiness. So rock evolved into a verb meaning to be great, and that rocks. How about dude? Dude, you totally rock. That expression may conjure up images of California beach bums, but keep hold of your surfboards. The story of dude is a long and wild ride. Dude was actually recorded in the late 1800s. It originally meant a man excessively concerned with his clothes, grooming, and manners. Perhaps the hipster of his day. The word is thought to have been shortened from doodle, D-O-O-D-L-E, slang for fool, and may have been connected to Yankee Doodle Dandy, like the song. Now dude spread as slang for a man in the U.S. in the 1900s. But hey, in the 80s, the dude took a jump of address, like, hey, dude, exclamation point, dude, that's awesome. What's cool about dude is that though associated with men in the past, it has become gender neutral. Yeah, it has. How many times did they say it on Broad City?
A million times. But I always do think of dude, where's my car?
Do you?
Yeah, whenever I hear dude.
I think Big Lebowski. I immediately think Jeff Bridges when I hear it.
Dude, your dudeness, El Duderino, if brevity isn't your thing.
Hey, man, you're Mr. Lebowski. I'm the dude. I'm telling you, the scene where they throw him in the back seat of the car. Hey, man, there's a beverage here. That whole scene is one of my favorite scenes in movie history. Philip Seymour Hoffman, David Huddleston, and Jeff Bridges. Bridges is so brilliant in that. He's great in the movie, but there's just something about that scene. Listen, man. There's some new crap has come to light, you know, that it's so funny. And the reactions that Huddleston and Philip Seymour Hoffman have, you know, like the deadpan reactions to him, like the dude is very, very high and, you know, drinking a Caucasian.
A white Russian?
Yeah, he calls him Caucasian.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
But yeah, it's my favorite scene in the movie. All right, and finally, to the max. Our final Gen X theme slang is to the max. It's short for to the maximum. And usually casually means completely or extremely. As in, that movie was entertaining to the max. Or even, I have hella homework to do and it's bumming me out to the max. As you can tell, this phrase was usually appears at the end of a sentence to give an extra bit of oomph to everything that came before it. To the Max is recorded in the early 1970s, a little bit early on the Gen X side of things, but it definitely took off and became tightly associated with the 80s. In fact, it's hard not to use the phrase without sounding out of date, though it can sometimes be a welcome bit of nostalgia. To the Max, dude.
That was a hella good list.
All right. So, yeah. Hey, let's go. First two people through on the phone lines right now at 312-981-7200. 312-981-7200. First two people through will be our two contestants for two rounds of Know Your Onion. This is when Tom will read a newspaper headline, and you have to decide whether it's a real news headline or it's from the satirical newspaper, The Onion, because it's so weird right now that it's hard to tell what's real news and what's not. 312-981-7200, first two people through, you'll be our contestants, and we will do some Know Your Onion.
It's the time of the season when love runs high. In this time, give it to me easy and let me try with pleasured hands to take you in the sun to promised lands, to show you everyone it's the time of the season for love.
Yeah, man, the zombies. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. That's how a buddy of mine at Jewel used to say the word. I went to go see Night of the Zombies. He's a Mexican dude. He was fantastic. Used to work with him, on the overnight shift. Hey, man, have you seen the movie Night of the Zombies? He sounded a little bit like Cheech. That was the zombies, man. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. We are live in the Skyline studio here on a Wednesday morning, and every Wednesday at 3:30, we play a round of Know Your Onion, which is a little game that Tom came up with. Tom will read. We have two contestants. They're on the lines right now, and Tom will read some news headlines, and you have to decide whether they're real, or the contestant has to decide whether they are from The Onion, the satirical newspaper. So it's real or The Onion. So shall we begin?
It's time to Know Your Onion!
That's right. I love this band. 60,000 people always cram into the studio every Wednesday morning around 3:30. Okay, so we have two contestants. Each will play a full round. And you got to get the majority of the headlines correct. Right, Tom?
That is correct.
All right. So let's bring in our first contestant. This is Mike on WGN. Hi, Mike.
Let me get off speaker.
Okay.
Hello.
Are you there, Mike?
Yes, I am.
Okay. Do you know The Onion?
Yeah, I hope so.
Okay. Well, all you have to do is guess whether these news headlines that you're going to hear are real or or from The Onion, and your answer is either real or The Onion. Got it?
Got it.
All right, Tom, let's go.
All right, Mike, your first headline. Sizzling sausages used to rescue collie lost in Highlands Forest. Sizzling sausages used to rescue border collie lost in Highlands Forest. Is that real or is that The Onion?
Oh, that's real.
Well, let's see.
Woo-hoo!
Very good, Mike.
That's real.
Yeah, that's coming to us from BBC Scotland. Yeah, the little border collie named Nell ran off after being frightened by the Coast Guard helicopter flying by, and they had to rescue her. They cooked a couple of sausages so that she would smell them and then come running.
That would bring me out of hiding.
Well, that's why they named it Snossages.
See, there you go.
Snossages.
All right, Mike, one for one. Good start. Okay.
All right, your next headline, Mike. Olympic Committee announces that Tokyo Games will still go on as planned because true athletes embrace every obstacle that comes their way. Is that real or is that The Onion?
That's real.
Let's see.
That's the onion. That's the timely onion.
Yeah, very timely.
All right, you're 1-1, Mike. Here we go.
All right, your next headline, Mike. NFL draft prospect sets combine record by scrubbing his entire social media presence in 17.64 seconds. Is that real or is that the onion?
He scrubbed his social?
Yeah, scrubbed his social media. He got rid of his entire social media presence in 17.64 seconds, setting a record.
I think that sounds like an onion.
Let's see. Very good.
Oh, nice that job. Yeah, it's definitely the onion. You can't do that in 17.6 seconds.
No, you can't. It takes a lot longer than that. Yeah. Take it for someone that knows.
All right. Yeah. All right, Mike. You get one more right and you're a winner. Here we go.
All right. School of Hard Knocks. Florida student learns that pepper spray is not body spray. Oh. Is that real or is that the onion?
Oh, I'd say that's real.
Let's see. He's got the jackpot.
Ah, there you go. What's the background on this?
So, a Florida middle school student mistakenly released pepper spray after grabbing what he thought was a canister of body spray from another student, school district officials said. Thinking it was body spray, the student who took the canister actually sprayed himself as if he were applying a body fragrance product.
Oh, no.
The gymnasium was evacuated, and ultimately 41 students were transported to area hospitals for care.
Wow.
Yeah.
What's a middle schooler doing with a body spray?
Or with a pepper spray?
Well, yeah, the pepper spray.
I got
spray,
a grandson still that age. Believe me, they need it.
Yeah. All right. All right, Mike, there you go. You got to hold the line, okay?
Yes.
Hang on. There you go. Mike is a winner. He got a desktop indoor weather station brought to you by American Weathermakers Heating and Cooling, the 60-Minute Men. Visit AmericanWeathermakers.com. So, congratulations, Mike. Okay, are we ready for the... I still can't get over this kid with the...
It's terrifying.
You ever had pepper spray? You ever been pepper sprayed?
Thankfully, no.
I have.
How'd that happen?
There were protesters outside of the Vic before an Ice Cube show.
Oh, okay.
Not Ice Cube. Ice-T. It was Body Count because Cop Killer came out. So, there were protesters outside, and we were just outside watching. We were going to... I mean, obviously, we were going to go in and see the show. Mm-hmm. But we were standing on the corner. This was Belmont and Sheffield, the Vic.
Yeah.
Standing on the corner, Belmont and Sheffield, and a bus full of protesters, including kids, drove by, and out the window, somebody pepper sprayed, and it went right across my chest. It didn't even hit me in the face. I had to throw my coat out. It was unbelievable. Wow. It was unbelievable. And it didn't even hit my face. It was just like right around my torso. And it was from a bus. It wasn't even up close. It was just psh, boom. Unbelievable. So it's not fun. Let me just say that. All right, let's see. We got our next contestant here.
Mm-hmm.
This is Tracy on WGN. Hi, Tracy.
How you doing, Nick?
All right, man. You got the onion, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
I'm familiar with it.
All right, so all you got to do is know the difference between a real headline and an onion headline. And, Tom, let's go.
All right, Tracy, your first headline, State Police Investigate Juice Box Theft. Is that real or is that the onion?
I'll say that's onion.
Let's see. No, that is real.
That's real.
Oh, God.
What happened?
So that's coming to us out of Pittsburgh. The Pennsylvania State Police were called to a Union School District on Baker Street on Friday for reports of a stolen juice box. They found that a known juvenile had stolen a juice box from the school cafeteria worth 80 cents. No word on if it was returned.
80 cents. Yeah. All right. Okay. All right, Tracy. Didn't start off too great, so let's try it again.
All right. Your next headline, Tracy. Female-owned Shell gas station in San Dimas becomes Shell for International Women's Day. Is that real or is that the onion?
That's real.
Let's see. Very good, Tracy.
Did Bill and Ted go there?
No, it was changed to Shell for International Women's Day. A female-owned and operated Shell gas station in San Dimas marked International Women's Day, changing the Shell logo to Shell as part of the company's new initiative, She Will.
Pretty cool.
Yeah.
Pretty
interesting. Cool. Interesting.
Excellent.
Stuff.
Come on, man. You can't say
excellent.
You can't say San Dimas and not think of Bill and Ted.
Right.
All right, you're 1-1, Tracy. Keep going.
All right, your next headline, Tracy. Ruth Bader Ginsburg flirting with 67-year-old intern again. Is that real or is that The Onion?
Ruth Bader Ginsburg. That's real.
Oh, no. Come on, man. No, man. No. Come on, man.
Come on, Tracy.
Oh. And it's on top of that, it's a 67-year-old intern?
Yeah. Yeah, unfortunately.
Hilarious.
That is The Onion.
Tracy, you can't get another one wrong or you lose.
Oh, God. Okay.
All right. Okay.
It's down to this. Your final headline, or possibly final headline. Roxborough woman celebrates 100th birthday by going to jail. Is that real or is that The Onion?
Show ends at 4.
That's real.
Let's see. There you go.
Nice job. All right. Go ahead and tell us about this one.
All right. So this is coming to us out of North Carolina. It's a really fun story. Ruth Bryant had never been in jail, but in honor of her 100th birthday, she checked an item off the bucket list, heading to jail in cuffs. Feisty Bryant fought her arrest, playfully kicking at Roxborough deputies who threatened to add resisting arrest and assault to the charges.
That's pretty funny.
That's very cute.
That's pretty funny. God bless her, 100 years old.
Yeah, 100 years old. Good for her.
Yeah. All right, Tracy, you're right now. You get this one right, you win. You get it wrong, you lose. So it comes down to this.
All right.
Okay.
This is it. Your final headline. New CIA torture program concert series brings Metallica into black sites to play 72-hour sets. Is that real or is that The Onion?
That's The Onion.
Let's see.
Woohoo!
There.
Nice job, Tracy. You were a winner. Congratulations.
Right.
Congratulations. You got yourself a desktop indoor weather station brought to you by American Weathermakers Heating and Cooling, the 60-Minute Men. Visit AmericanWeathermakers.com. And you hold the line, too. Everybody hold the line. And we got some winners, and if you couldn't get through, you want to try it again, we'll do it again next week at 3:30. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We are live in the Skyline studio, and we're here until 4. And at 4 o'clock, we head over to Bradley Place, the TV side of WGN, and get some early morning news from them. And then at 5 o'clock, Bob Surratt has your morning drive. 312-981-7200 is the phone number if you would like to join us. 312-981-7200. And so, Tom, do we? I want to read this story. Do we have both songs? So that we can compare them. Now, you know, there have been a lot of songs that sound like other songs. And some of them seem like ripoffs. And we've talked about this topic before on the show. And sometimes you go, oh, man, that's pretty close. Like, you played a song earlier by ELO that sounded like Funky Town. And, you know, sometimes it's by mistake. You know, you don't think. I mean, like, I wouldn't think Jeff Lynne is going to rip off Lips, Inc. Somebody like Jeff Lynne. But for years now, Zeppelin has been accused of stealing the Stairway to Heaven riff. But Led Zeppelin has triumphed in a long-running copyright dispute after a U.S. appeals court ruled that they did not steal the opening riff in Stairway to Heaven. The British rock legends were accused in 2014 of ripping off a song called Taurus by the U.S. band Spirit. Taurus was written in 1968, 3 years before Stairway to Heaven. I'll continue the story, but let's listen to Stairway first, okay? Here's Stairway to Heaven, but Stairway. You know, there are songs that get played on FM rock stations that you don't ever need to hear again. I never get sick of Stairway.
Stairway to Seven.
I never, ever get sick of it. Now, Baba O'Reilly, I could live a full life and never hear that song again. I'd be fine. Okay, so that was Stairway to Heaven. This song is called Taurus, was written 3 years before Stairway to Heaven by the rock group Spirit. It's kind of close, but no. It's a little similar, but no. They clearly did not rip that song off. Let's see. But now the Ninth U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals in San Francisco has upheld the 2016 trial verdict that found Led Zeppelin did not copy it. By the way, what are songs that sound alike? We'll talk about this for a little bit before the end of the show. What are other songs that sound similar and sometimes like, hey, maybe that's a ripoff? 312-981-7200, 312-981-7200. Stairway to Heaven regularly appears on lists of the greatest rock songs ever written, and the case has been one of the music industry's longest-running and closely watched disputes. Led Zeppelin singer Robert Plant, guitarist Jimmy Page, who wrote the song, could have faced a bill for millions of dollars in damages if they lost. The Spirit song, written by the band's guitarist Randy Wolf, known as Randy California, he died in 1997. The case was brought by Michael Skidmore, a trustee of his estate. Led Zeppelin and Spirit played live together after Taurus was written, and Mr. Skidmore suggested Page may have written his riff after hearing Taurus live. He claims the songs had similar chord progressions. The case went to a high-profile trial in 2016 at which Page and Plant gave evidence. The jury rejected the claim at the time, deciding the tracks were not intrinsically similar. However, in 2018, the Ninth U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals decided the trial judge had made a series of errors and ordered a new hearing. On Monday, a panel of 11 judges revealed a 9-2 decision that Stairway to Heaven did not infringe the copyright of the Spirit song. So Zeppelin's off the hook for this song. What's funny about this is that, you know, they are widely known as stealers of music, especially from older black bluesmen. You mean they take writing credit for, like, they took writing credit for the Lemon song. That's, but you know what? If I'm not mistaken, subsequent releases now have the old blues legends' names as the writers of the songs. I think that's changed because they were taken to court by the families of these.
Well, they were taken to court by Howlin' Wolf.
Yeah, and I mean if you listen to. Some of these Zeppelin songs and play them alongside some of the old blues songs.
Well, here's something interesting. Here's the fact behind that. December 1972, Arc Music, owner of the publishing rights to Howlin' Wolf songs, sued Led Zeppelin for copyright infringement on the Lemon song. The parties settled out of court. Though the amount was not disclosed, Howlin' Wolf apparently received a check for $45,000 from Arc Music immediately following the suit, and subsequent releases included a co-songwriter credit for him.
He only got 45 grand?
Right.
Seriously? Only 45 grand? Do we know how popular that song was? I mean, come on. How often it was played? You know? But yeah, you know, especially the first couple of albums by Zeppelin, you know, you listen to it and you're like, you didn't write that. You lifted that from an old blues dude. A lot of them from this city.
Dazed and Confused was literally a rewrite of a song written by a woman.
Right. Yeah.
But, like, the problem is that you would never confuse the two. You'd be like, oh yeah, they use kind of the same deal, but
yeah.
Babe, I'm Gonna Leave You, I'm mm-hmm. pretty sure as well.
I think the most blatant one is the Lemon song. That's the one that is the absolute most blatant ripoff of all of the songs that Zeppelin were accused of ripping off. I still love Zeppelin, though. I love them. I do. But that's a thing that's been haunting these guys for a long time. It's funny. It's ironic that the song that they got sued for, that they were brought to court for, was not a blues song. You know? It was a Stairway to Heaven. It's like a classic rock, you know, weird ballad. It doesn't sound like blues at all.
Yeah. You could also bring up You Shook Me from their first album. It's Muddy Waters.
Yeah. There's no question about it. Yeah. You go back and look at those first couple albums, of Zeppelin's first couple albums. So, all right. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. And coming up at 4 o'clock, we head over to Bradley Place on the TV side for the news.